This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
This is Brightside Home Theater.
Ready when you are.
Ready when I am. Joe Klusnik. Is that how you say it? Joe Klusnik.
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 Klusnik. You got it.
This has been a long time coming, buddy.
We've been emailing back and forth for a while. I feel like you've been on like 1,000 car rides with me, but you just do all the talking because I'm listening to you on the way to work, on the way home.
To be fair, that's what it's like with me in person.
Sure.
It's like, people like, would you just shut up? Yeah, it's, and let's say, you were the one that reached out to me and introduced me to Brett.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah. So, I got to know Brett, a while back now. So Brett and I had some historical, employment in the past, right? He and I both worked for different parts of the Good Guys. I've worked at, Circuit City, Soundstream Technologies. I knew a lot of the folks at Monster Cable back when he was there. So he and I just had a lot of people in common that we both knew, and then connected when I was shopping for a Kaleidoscape. So kind of got to know him as I was going through that purchasing process. And then we got to hang out a ton at Cedia last year. I was one of the few people who attended, which made it for a great show for me, but not so much for the rest of the industry.
Right.
But yeah, so Brett and I have known each other, and I've done the same with other podcasts I've been interested in. You know, I've helped get guests on HT Guys or AV Rant, things like that too.
Yeah. It was funny because you reached out to me and you were like, I think this would be great, and I was like, okay. I thought it was.
Sure,
why not? I had always, you knew just because I was a fan of Kaleidoscape. And this was like, just from listening to me, like, I think you'd like to talk to Brett. And I was like, yeah, I would. That would be great.
And yeah. So I don't know. Do you remember when Todd Welty was on AV Rant talking subwoofers? So I was in one of his classes and he and I talked about that. I'm like, hey, you should, share this message. Plus I just want to hear more of you talking about this stuff. So that's got him out there. I used to do work for a company called Falcon Screens back in the day. So they did an interview with him, the founder, over at HT Guys a couple of years back. So, I just like talking about this stuff, and it's more interesting for me to listen to shows where you're talking about stuff I'm interested in. So,
yeah. Right. Yeah. Talk about, that's like, I think you're the original Takeover Tuesday person. You literally cultivated a show for yourself.
Fantastic.
Because, no, and that's what you said in your email. You're like, he's a great guy. I'd love to hear him talk more about this and have you talk to him and stuff. And what was funny is I think it was like a little over a year ago. It was like April or something of last year when when you put me in touch with him. And just because of scheduling, and Brett, he's a great guy. Yeah. And we talked all through the summer trying to get that hooked up. And then it wasn't until I think September or something. I think it was right after I remember talking to him in July, and he was saying he was going to a show. And then they were going to have some announcements like late August. And he goes like, I'll come on your show after that. And he goes, actually, maybe I'll use your show. I'll announce some stuff on your show too. And I was like, absolutely.
Right.
But we were talking all summer long and it was great, but I was like, I want to get this to the listeners. And it's like, but that's how great these people are too. It's like, they're so busy doing this stuff. But then to be able to come on, and especially on my show, because I'm not your textbook, promotional stuff. It's
you're an enthusiast who wants to share this stuff, but that's who they want to talk to, right? And I commend you because the home theater is a niche community, and it's hard to find people that want to geek out about this stuff as much as I do, right? So it's a pleasure for me to talk to someone else who's as into home theater as I am.
Yeah. Thanks, Joe. Thanks. That's what's fun, and I was like, I'm getting goosebumps. It's like, because that's what people, it's amazing to me, and I say I feel like it's getting repetitive, but it is, it's amazing to me that the people there's so many people. We're just so like-minded in that we just, not just in home theater, but that we just want somebody to talk to.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of hobbies and interests that are out there that are like that too, right? Yeah. Whether you're into, you know, boats or cars or guns or whatever, you know, my oldest son is huge in the Lego industry, right? So he's been into it for his whole life. He works for Legoland in New York, and he's recently started doing, you know, a lot of social media, Instagram, podcasting, things like that. Just getting out there and talking to other people. But, you know, same thing that we have in home theater. If you're going to go to the CES show or CES or the local shows, you're out there, you know, trying to learn more about the gear you're interested in.
Yeah. So what did you do? Let me ask you, because you seem to be, just from talking to you, you get out more and you do talk to more people. And where do you find it's best to have these conversations? You know, like, do you have places in your area?
I wish there was more of that. You know, I've been to some of the home theater meetups as organized through AVS Forum, you know, pre-pandemic. You know, some of the guys who I've worked in and around this industry for years and years. But yeah, if you can get to the shows, those people are there and want to talk to you, want to talk about their gear, want to talk about their experience and their company. So yeah, it's a great place if you can get to the big shows.
Yeah, I would love it if they, obviously we all would love it, but it's such an expensive hobby that I feel like there aren't enough places to go to just shop and hang out. But like,
right.
So what I'm thinking is like the other podcast I do is comic books, right? My buddy owns a comic book store.
And I was huge into comics.
Yeah.
You know, I've got 6 or 7 long boxes in the garage. Everything's still bagged and boarded and all that. So yeah.
Yeah. But
we can talk comics as long as you want.
Oh God. So, but what's fun about comics is it's a weekly periodical or bi-weekly, some of them are monthly, right? And it gets you into the store weekly. And my other show is two guys hanging out in a comic book store talking. Right. That's what we do, right?
Oh yeah.
So that's fun. I wish we had a place like that. I wish there were more places, stores to go to hang out for home theater.
You've seen the death of the brick and mortar stores, right?
And yeah.
You Google home theater near me, and it's just there's not a lot of places that are opening more. So you're either buying it directly from manufacturer, you're buying it on Amazon, you're buying it through you know, retailers online, and there's nothing wrong with that. But it's hard to experience and know. Is that product right for you until you get it into your own environment?
Right. Exactly. And but that's the thing. It's like, it's just so hard.
Oh yeah.
Those stores don't want to have just people show up to talk.
Well, they're on commission. They're there to make money. Right. They're there to make a living and pay the bills, of course.
Yeah.
But you know, I spent years and years in car audio shops back in the day when, you know, both as a customer and then as an employee later on. So, you know, that was a big part of forming, you know, my education and background around this stuff, and then studied it at school when I could, studied it when I went to the CEDIA shows, became a, you know, CEDIA certified designer, and just, you know, ate this stuff up.
So did you, when you got into like doing all of the research and stuff, did you like have a theater and then want to research how these things work and then get into the business, or did you get into the business and then build a theater? You know what I mean?
A little of both. So I was in the car audio business after college.
Okay. Well,
I graduated from one of the UCs and worked in retail for 3 years, which made my parents really happy as I was selling and installing car stereos. But turned that into a marketing job, went to work for a manufacturer that did home audio and car. And I'm familiar with Soundstream Technologies.
Sounds familiar.
Remember them from back in the day. Was there for a while, but much more on the car audio side. Went to the big IASCA shows, was an IASCA judge, did all that kind of side of things. And then that company went through some troubles, ended up moving down to Southern California, and I didn't go with it. From there, stayed in marketing, and the next job I was in was doing residential heating and air conditioning, very large production builder that we were doing, you know, thousands of homes a year, and I was doing marketing for them. And then they found out that I had a background in consumer electronics, and they had bought a low voltage company. And that kind of pulled me into helping them from a product manager standpoint. So I was dealing with the, you know, the Sonance, Yamaha, JBL Synthesis, Monster, all the companies. I got to pick and choose what we were going to sell in that role. And so it was great to get to know a lot of those folks. And then that's when I kind of got into the CDA side of things, got my designer certification. I have been ever since then. And that was 10, 15 plus years ago.
Wow.
But I've had between car audio, family room systems, and then I would consider this my second dedicated theater that I'm sitting outside of right now.
Your second dedicated theater?
Yeah. So previous home, and what's funny is when I sold the house, the theater was a big selling point in the last house because the guy who knocked on the door said, hey, I've got a client that's looking for a house and they want a bonus room that they can do a home theater. And I'm like, well, let me take you upstairs. I've got one ready for you. And he's like, can I bring my client over like Friday night right now? And so, yeah, he bought that. And then what's funny is earlier this year, I ended up doing a second home theater for that guy who bought my house. So and I stayed in touch and he moved and I, you know, put in a JVC NZ7 for him and all SVS speakers. And so, yeah, built a system for him. That was a lot of fun.
That's awesome.
Got into it as a hobby, learned as much as I could about it, you know, went to the classes, went to the trainings, went to the dealer and manufacturer events, and used all of that not only for people I was helping with theaters, but also in my own theaters.
Right.
You know, I kind of believe that I'm trying to figure out what is the one best right way to build a home theater. And obviously it's different for everybody.
Yeah.
But from all the classes that I've been through, you know, it's, can you mimic that dubbing stage that these movies are created on? So, you know, that's kind of what we've tried to do in the theaters that I've been part of building is, you know, very, very similar LCR across the front, you know, a good surround setup. I've recently gotten into Atmos in this theater, you know, now 5 years ago, but was my first Atmos system. So yeah, built a lot of fun ones.
Yeah. It's funny. It's that's the kind of theater I want to have is that, that dubbing, that room, that the screening room, right? Type of theater. But I've been in theaters where that's not the case, where it's a little bit more artistic, a little bit more, it's more to taste, to the customer's taste, right?
Well, like, and so, and I've had conversations with folks, do you want a lights on or a lights off experience, right? Lights on, you walk in and it's, you know, columns and architecture and crown moldings and beautiful, beautiful experience. But I'm like, yeah, all that goes away when you turn the lights off. I'm looking for, you know, lights off experience. I want to be sucked into my movie.
Right.
You know, I care more about the movie and the story first and then, you know, probably the gear a close second.
Yeah.
And then, you know, but yeah, my room is, you know, my kids have joked with me, like, Dad, why don't we do like a pirate theater, or a Star Wars theater? And I'm like, yeah, because that's going to cost a lot and won't really add that much to, you know, the next time we're watching Ghostbusters or whatever else it is. So.
Yeah, exactly. I have that artistic side of me that wants to do like, I'd love to do like the deck of one of the ships from Star Wars or something.
Oh, yeah.
And I could do the false walls and make it look like, it's like you're looking out into a star field and you do all this stuff, right? And it'd be fantastic. And like you said, I don't even know if it would be a lot of money for me to do it because I would just artistically do it. And it's just a lot of time, right?
Right.
But then, like you said, what do? You get in there, you turn the lights out, and you're like...
Yeah, and if it can contribute to acoustic treatments, proper speaker placement, all those things, then I see a benefit for both that way, right?
Right.
But we used to, when I'd go to the CD shows, we would get the book that kind of detailed all of the different award competitors for the year. And we'd go through those and just kind of, you know, I like this, I don't like this, they did this right, they did this wrong, you know. And, you know, you'd see these theaters that were, you know, $100,000 and under, 100 to quarter million to $500,000, you know, on up. And you'd see these different categories. And what changed a lot was the size of the room, you know, how big your audience was, how, you know, the level of gear to support the size of that room, the number of seats, and then how ornate the theaters got, right? How much more did you spend on, you know, the painting on your ceiling,
aesthetics,
whatever it was. Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, exactly. And it's like, at the end of the, that was like when I had Brent Butterworth on, and I was like, what is it like seeing these grand theaters that people, that millionaires, billionaires have? And he goes, and remember what he said? He was like,
yeah,
your theater might be better. Because a lot of them, technically, like for the actual reproduction of the movie you want to watch, he's like, a lot of them weren't very good. It just,
right,
because it was what the homeowner wanted, and it's like, okay, well, this isn't going to execute the actual job of the theater very well, but it's going to look great.
Right. I had a buddy of mine that came over once we got the Atmos set up, and he had been, you know, in TV production and worked in audio and video, and he said, this rivals what you're going to get at IMAX after hearing my theater. We watched a couple of scenes from, you know, Mission Impossible 4 or 5, I think it was, and he's like, this is, you know, very impressive. I'm like, well, cool, thanks. I like it.
Yeah, I know. It's like, it's one thing when we think it, you know, because I go to
get the validation from someone else.
Yeah, yeah, like, of course, I did all the work. I put this in. I did, of course, I'm going to think it's better. But I also know from my own experience, and I'm sure you do too, that I didn't always think that. Like, I was trying to get there, right? But now that we are there, and we can legitimately say, like, I've been to Dolby Cinema, I've been to IMAX, I've been to these. IMAX to me is the only one. We can't duplicate that at home. Actually, I have an idea on that, and I'll talk to you about that in a second. We can't duplicate that IMAX giant, you know, 10-story screen at home because it's just not possible. But the actual environment, that the sound that you're getting, and you can have a really pretty big screen and field of view similar to the theater. So right. And it's like going to Dolby Cinema, since I've added my SVSs, which was what, 4 or 5 years ago now. And it's just, I mean, the pounding that I get, it's very difficult to duplicate that in a bigger theater. I mean, it's great. And it's awesome when you go to a Dolby Cinema. But I got to be honest, I don't think it's that much of a difference between mine and Dolby Cinema.
Yeah, so I took the wife and kids too. We've been to one Dolby Cinema. There isn't really one close by in the Sacramento area, but we were in Las Vegas. We saw Spider-Man Far From Home there, and I was impressed by it. You know, it was big, it was loud, it was bright. You know, it was a good experience. But I've also dragged them to theaters. You know, we went to the Cinerama Dome when we were down in Los Angeles to see one of the Star Wars movies for the first time. So, you know, we've been to the Ruby Theater up in Lake Chelan, Washington. That was 110 years old. So we kind of dragged a family into my hobby as we go on vacations and things like that, or vice versa. I'll make vacations out of things I'm doing anyways. We went down to Southern California, not once, but on two different occasions to buy home theater chairs used, and ended up having to go to Universal Studios or Disneyland or whatever.
Well, there you go.
Part of that. Right. So,
yeah.
Yeah. I'll take you guys to a theme park. You just help me put all these chairs in the U-Haul.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's pretty cool. I bought my home theater chairs, and that's the only set I've ever bought.
What kind are you using?
They have no specific. I bought them at Jordan's Furniture out here.
Right.
And it was a fun experience, right? So I don't know if people around the country are familiar with Jordan's Furniture. I think it's just a local, it's a large furniture store. They have like three big stores around here. They have IMAX theater in them. And this was back in probably 2003, 2002. And my wife was like, we need theater chairs in here. Wait, what? I was like, okay. Yeah. I'm like, because I had just taken, we had moved into this house and we bought new furniture for the living room. So we took the couch and the love seat, and that was what was originally in the theater. And she's like, we should get home theater chairs. I was like, okay. So family trip, took the little kids, and we went to Jordan's Furniture, and they had a room set up for home theater seating. So you can go in and sit in all the different chairs and everything and pick the fabric and stuff. And it was funny because there's my wife and I and my two little kids at the time, and we're bouncing around in the chairs. And we're legitimately testing them out, but there's nobody in the room. There's no salesperson. There's no, because nobody goes in there, right?
But you know, the chairs are something that you're going to interact with physically for 2+ hours at a time. So that's a big part of the experience also, right? As much as the picture and the sound and all that, and the remote control and how easy the gear is to use.
And exactly. So we're bouncing around in these chairs, figuring out which ones we think are best. I'm thinking like they had some high back chairs with nice things, but I wanted like right at the shoulders because I didn't want to block my speakers that are behind me. I'm thinking all of this stuff. They had a like a false, like almost like a false screen at the front of the room just so that you could get the idea that you're sitting in a theater. And a woman comes in and goes, can I help you guys? And like, we're interested in buying some. Oh, my wife says we're interested. And she goes, okay, well, what room were you looking for? I'm like, these.
The theater.
She goes, oh, she goes, nobody ever comes in here. She goes, most people come in thinking it's a theater and they just mess around. And she goes, I was trying to direct you to where you're supposed to go. I was like, no, we want these. And they was like, it was just such an unheard of thing. But they had this great big room with probably 12 different styles of chairs. It's set up in rows of four. So that's a lot of stuff. I mean, it's a lot of couches, basically, is what it is, in rows of four. Mm. And then when I had them delivered, the Jordan's guys show up and they're like, yeah, you got a couch and a love seat? No, we have 5 chairs. I ordered a row of 3 and a row of 2 is what it would set up to. And the guy's like, what? So they take them out and they unbox them and they're like, what the hell are these? Even the delivery guys didn't know what the hell they were doing.
Well, I think that just speaks to the niche industry.
Yeah.
Niche of this industry, right? That.
Yeah.
Even the people who are selling some of the stuff for it aren't into it necessarily.
Yeah. And that, so they did that in the driveway and they're like, where are you putting these? So I'm like, come on down, come down my backyard, come in the back door. And I'm like, right into that room. And they're like, oh, now this makes sense. And they're like, I was wondering, even in the driveway, the guy's like, this is going to look ridiculous in a living room. But then he comes into a dedicated theater and it made sense.
And a dedicated theater is the right place for those. I agree. Yeah. Theater seating in the family room is not the right look.
No, no, especially with a riser.
Right.
Oh, that. So how many sets of chairs have you owned?
Yeah. That's a source.
You go
subject.
Through them fast?
No, it's trying to find the right ones.
Right.
Right. So, in my previous theater, we had, kind of started the way you're talking about, a couple of microfiber reclining couches, mm-hmm. Seating for 6 people, right? And lots of room around those. And that was okay to start with. But then I was, I do spend way too much time on, AVS forum or Craigslist or eBay looking at used or gear, whatever have you, and found a guy down in Southern California that was selling some row of Cinematech chairs, which were, one of my end game type of products, mm-hmm. and ended up going down there, bought 5 chairs from him. Those became the front row. The 2 couches moved to the back row and kind of filled out the whole width of the room, and had those and was happy with those for quite a while. Sold that house, told him I'm taking the Cinematech chairs with me. You can keep my couches and the rest of the gear in the theater. And that's all, went to the next owner, moved those into the theater room we have now, and had that row again of 5. For a while, my wife's like, well, we had seating for 11 before. How are we going to get back to that? And so went through a series of changes of chairs. Bought a used set of Fortress chairs off of a director down in Santa Barbara area that wasn't going to use his anymore. Got them, sold my other chairs, got these in place, and had them for a while and didn't really like them. Didn't love them, right? And they were so cloth.
What didn't you like about them? Like
didn't feel like the back support was right for me. They kind of pushed the lumbar too far forward. I didn't care for them being cloth. And when I bought them, I thought they were gray and black. Turns out they were gray and dark blue and didn't work at all with the color of the room. So I ended up selling those. They got shipped back east somewhere. And I bought 4 sets of twin chairs from actual commercial theater that had shut down. Guy down in Southern California shipped them up, and they were beat. They were used, they were, I'm like, well, these are scuffed. He's like, oh yeah, you just kind of paint them with this brown stuff and then you can fix the scuffs. And I'm like, okay, God. I got a smoking deal on them. It was interesting to have them. They had the glass tables They had the numbers that lit up. You know, you could see what seat you were actually in.
Oh, cool.
And that was kind of cool for a while. But again, they had those. They all matched. They were the right color for the room, but they were not ideal. And then saw on AVS Forum somebody else selling a set of 12 Cinematech chairs, Terminator 2 in brown leather, motorized. I'm like, oh my gosh, these are the ones I want. This is, you know, $50,000, $60,000 worth of chairs.
Wow.
And so I went back and forth with, turns out it was a guy's wife, and he was, again, another Hollywood director type. And she was tired of them being in storage. They had been in a storage place for years. They were going to build a house down in Ojai that was going to have a theater in it. House never got built. And she wanted, you know, money for something else. So made a deal with them, took the family down back down in Southern California, bought them all again. And so those are the 11 chairs that I have now, and been very, very happy with those. But, you know, carrying chairs up and down a hallway to a second floor theater repeatedly got really tired. You know, my kids got sick of helping me. My buddies told me, you know, next time you need to move these, I'll give you $100, hire somebody else. So that was, I don't think I can ever get another set of chairs because I don't have anyone to help me carry them up and down.
Sounds like a nice set though. T2.
They are real happy with them. The brand was the Terminator 2. That's not the model.
The model
from Cinematech. But yeah, motorized recliners. Oh. But I mean, if you go on AVS Forum and look at my theater build, you can see the evolution of our seating.
That's wow. Yeah, that sounds nice. Yeah, I even it's weird. I spend obviously way more time in my theater than my wife does, but even she's like, I think it's time we get new chairs. We've had ours for like 20 years, and I like them. I mean, I have at this point, I'm up to. I have a little back lumbar thing for my back so that I can have just better support. And it's just a little thing you buy off of Amazon and you strap it around and it sits there, but it's black so it matches. They're just black microfiber, you know, regular manual reclining chairs. And they go pretty flat back. So, if you wanted to take a nap, you can. I like them. I love them, actually. Yeah. And to the point that they're so comfortable, I could sit in there for hours, you know, multiple viewings, couple movies, and not have a problem at all. But you see all the newer stuff, you know.
There's always something shinier. Grass is always greener.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And back when I got mine, they didn't have the attachments type thing that they have now. That wasn't even an option anywhere in this room at the time. I think buying chairs online wasn't as prevalent as it is now. It was, you know, you could, but it was super expensive. It was way easier and cheaper just to go to like what we did is go to Jordan's. And I mean, it was just like buying regular furniture in your area. So it made it super simple.
Yeah, but now you can get the, you know, the table or the wine glass holder,
yeah.
The iPad holder, all these.
The iPad holders.
Bells and whistles.
Yeah, lots of that. What do you think of, I'm not a fan. What do you think of the lights underneath? I don't like that.
Completely agree. If I wanted my room washed in blue light shining up at my screen, I would do it.
Yeah.
I don't care for the lighting under the chair unless you can turn it off.
Unless it can go off when the lights in the room go off. Like when you, that I would, is cool, but I've talked to a few people that it's not as easy to connect it. And
yeah,
I think there's got to be a way for I know there's a way to do it. If whatever you plug them into, you can either rewire the lights set to be powered separately. Like say you have powered chairs like yours, right? And you rewire the lights to a separate source and then you plug that into whatever line is on for your lights.
Yeah. And so many of them these days have controls around the cup holders where you can do more and more of that. So.
Right. But I would just want that like one touch, like when I turn my lights out in my room.
Build it as part of the macro.
Exactly. Make everything go down. Because like you said, it's like I see this and like I see people and they're watching a movie or even in the ads for these chairs. It's like people, the movie's on, they're watching. And you're like, what the hell?
Why do you have blue light shining on?
Yeah. All right. I got a light controlled room and now my seats are going to light up. It's like
the other thing I love about, you know, printed ads and magazines is you never see the wires for the speakers.
No.
I'm like, yeah, that's a hardwood floor. You did not hide wires. That's all Photoshopped. Come on.
There is a way to do it, though, if you do it right. Because I was thinking of doing hardwood in my next theater because my walls are going to be pretty much 100% sound absorption around the room. I'm doing cloth panels and everything in my design. So I'm like, I could actually get away with a hardwood floor because I got so much sound absorption. I'm not worried about it. And then put like a rug, area rug down at the front and stuff. Using hardwood would actually enable me. I could run wires underneath. If you know, like when you're laying the hardwood down, you could actually put it in. So it's like you could run a wire. It is possible. And hide it. But it's easier with carpet, obviously. But yeah. So
I'm curious about the poster behind you. Is that a Return of the Jedi or a Revenge of the Jedi poster?
That is, if you look, Revenge.
Yeah.
It's a Revenge of the Jedi. The original poster from Return of the Jedi, which is
right.
They wanted to name it Revenge of the Jedi, but as you know, they were like, hey, wait a minute.
They actually printed some of those. Those did exist out there. And the original ones are very valuable.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, that's not an original. That's just a print. That was out, a year before. They were actually out in cinemas as Revenge of the Jedi a year in advance of the movie coming out.
Until Lucas saw it and said, no, that's not what we're calling it.
Yeah, exactly. And then so it is pretty cool. But I got that one quite a few years ago, actually. Mm-hmm. But your posters are really, you've got what, Spider-Man Homecoming right over your shoulder. You got Pirates of the Caribbean, and you have a nice Star Wars, similar to the one that I have in my theater, the original poster.
This one. The Star Wars was actually a gift on my 10th anniversary from my wife. So she got that for me, and that's autographed by the entire original cast. So that one's pretty cool. There's some folks on there that aren't with us anymore that are signatures on that one.
Yeah.
The Pirates of the Caribbean there, found that on Craigslist. Somebody was selling that, and it's actually numbered on the back and autographed by the cast. So Johnny Depp and everything's on that one.
Wow.
But bought it from somebody's parents who the kid had gone off to college, never came home. They're like, we're cleaning his room out. I'm like, oh, I'll take that from you, sure. And then, Spider-Man. And if you can see it, there's actually the Marvel lanyard from the premiere is on that one. So that came with it when I bought that one. But that one, again, autographed by the cast.
Wow.
And so I've probably got 20 plus other posters in this room and then in the hallway leading up to the theater.
But
most of those, these are the only autographed ones. That's why they show up behind me in camera.
It's funny. I can't wait. I'm hoping with my next theater, which will be, it was going to be in this house, but now maybe we are building a new house. So it'll be a few years, but I've always wanted that room outside the theater.
The arcade, the lobby, the gear room. Yeah, me too. That's a next goal.
Yeah, I've always wanted that. I've always wanted, like, have you ever seen, like, Todd Anderson stuff? He's big into pinball and stuff. He has a pinball. He has, like, basically an arcade outside his theater. It's awesome.
Yeah, and I would love that. You don't know how many quarters I dropped in arcades over the years.
Just to mess around. I'd want two arcade machines. I'm not even picking the game. I just want to have two because that's what an arcade, you got to have more than one to have an arcade. So it's like, I want two stand up arcade machines.
Yeah. And full size, not this mini.
Yeah. Stuff, right? Yeah. You see the ones that are like mini, but you can buy the box on them to stand. Right. That's like, no. Let's go authentic here. So I want that. And I want a concession stand. Since I was a kid, when I say a kid, when I was in my 20s and I was designing theaters, when I'd go in, now you've actually designed theaters, you've built a lot of theaters for people and help with stuff. When you were starting out in your own, did you design theaters like everywhere you went in your head?
I would walk into rooms and go on, yeah, I could put the speakers there, yep. and put the TV there. Yeah, oh. yeah, sure.
We, you know, getting just, goosebumps again, Joe.
I do the same thing in car audio, right? When I was yeah. in high school, I'd be like, I'd draw it on my desk, you know, mm-hmm. what kind of a stereo system would I put in this car or that car? But yeah.
Yeah. Like, where can, I mean, do you, were you big into the separates in cars? Go separate oh, yeah. the tweeters. You add that, pull oh, yeah. that tweeter up and, I oh, want,
yeah, you had the, you know, the 7-inch mid bass and the door and the 4-inch and the tweeter and the kick panel with the high end passive crossovers. Oh yeah, all that.
Yeah, shit. Yeah, yeah. And you, you raise the tweeter up because I had, when I would put them in cars, like I remember doing my Beretta, and I pulled off the pillar covers for the windshield and mm-hmm. like scrolled that out with a little scroll saw, put it because I wanted it to look factory. I wanted yep. it to look stealthy, and I wanted, you know, just be like, and like, what are these things? Those are speakers.
Right.
It's like,
you know, I had a 68 Mustang with, you know, custom fiberglass kick panels that we had done yeah. 5 1/4 in a tweeter, and we didn't want to cut the car up. So built all of this out, but it looked as factory as you could get.
Yeah. And it's like, yeah, it separates in a car. And it, mm-hmm. I honestly, in my opinion, I think it works a lot better for a car environment because you're getting that tweeter up higher. As opposed to like what comes in a lot, they're doing it now in cars anyways, but back in the 80s and
yeah.
you didn't have separates. You had to do it uh-oh. Yourself.
But you know, 80s, 90s, car audio is huge. And that's just seen an industry that just more or less disappeared as manufacturers realized, hey, we can do a better job than these yeah. guys, you know, cutting our cars up aftermarket.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you still get a better, I think you still can get a better sound in your oh, car yeah. with, I just absolutely. Put one in my Mazda. I have an 05 Mazda RX-8. And last summer, I tore the dash apart. And you really have to tear the dash apart on that thing because mm-hmm. that panel is all one with it's the
center radio. Console shifter, yeah, all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And it has your AC's a part of it. So you have to get the custom piece. I put in an Apple Play. You know, mm-hmm. a Sony Apple Play, and I love it now. I actually like driving the car even more now because now I don't listen to the radio anymore. And my wife and I, whenever we'd go out in the car, it was like, we're just stuck because we're so used to listening to either Pandora or when I'm alone, I'm a podcast, yep. right? And it's like now we took the, after I installed that, my wife and I were in that car. Like all summer long, every weekend, we'd be like, drive here, just go for drives, listening, because we had more to listen to and talk and listen to podcasts and stuff. So, but yeah, that was a project. That was because they're so in the modern car, they're so integrated into the car. Yeah. It's a lot harder.
Oh, I've got of the 4 or 5 cars we have now, family cars, one of them has an aftermarket system in that. And that's something I put in years ago. But you know, I've got a Chevy Volt where it's all touchscreen integrated. You know, yeah. I'm just going to plug it in my phone and listen to podcasts while right. I'm commuting. You know, my wife's car, same thing. It's, you know, a Honda Civic where it's all touchscreen and controls everything. So we're not going to mess with that. I got an 07 Shelby GT that's all stock, and I'm not going to mess with that one. So, yeah, I'm just like, I'll listen to podcasts.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. Do you think that podcasts are part of the reason that car audio might have gone down?
I think there's been a lot of changes, whether it's been, you know, earbuds that all right. of the younger folks are listening to that don't have the same level of appreciation for music that we used to have. You know, there's kind of been this death of hi-fi for, except for hobbyists and that part of it. But then I think it's also just been that the car manufacturers have, like you said, either put better and better systems into their cars and or it's just changed the way the manufacturing's done. It's harder to put aftermarket into it these days.
Yeah. Because what I was thinking is the people that are audiophiles, you know that the best environment isn't in your car.
No.
Right? So if you're...
But it's extremely immersive and tactile when you're in a car with a big yeah. system, right?
Yeah, as a kid, you got the bass thumping and the car's vibrant. And it's like, I remember, like, it wasn't tuned right until the mirrors were vibrating. Right? So, like, you're driving along.
I've been in cars at 155 dB where your eyeballs won't focus anymore.
Right. That yeah, that's so, good yeah. for driving.
Yeah, not so much. And this has been, you know, Brightside Car Audio Talk. But yeah. What's funny is that this all leads into home theater for a lot of folks, right? That
everybody.
You get installers who figured out how to customize stuff when they were in the car audio industry, mm-hmm. that they're like, oh, I can just build that out of fiberglass, whatever it was. Yep. And those guys are willing to build that stuff now in home theater. You get enthusiasts who, you know, the only place they had to put money into a system was in a car because they yep. lived in an apartment or they lived at mom and dad's or whatever, right? So they put all their money into their car audio system and then they're like, hey, I've got a house now. I wonder what I can do in here, right? Yeah. So the home theater is kind of a natural evolution from that early love. And, you know, I remember being a little kid and, you know, wandering away from my mom while she was doing shopping. I'd go look at the stereo stuff at Macy's or whatever. I'm like, hey, look at that Sony Strad receiver. That looks awesome.
Yeah.
No idea. Like, the volume control moves when you hit the remote. That's cool.
Yeah. Oh, how about that? A remote in the car.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, thought it was the coolest thing. And like, and it's like, you couldn't wait to be like, hey, anybody want to listen to me? And they're in the back seat. You control it.
Yeah.
Aren't I the cat's ass?
Like, yeah.
Like, what do you need a remote in a car?
As a father of four, I'm like, here, you guys watch whatever you want. Just put it on.
Yeah, that makes sense.
As we're long distance road trips.
Right. That makes sense. But as a, you know, an 18-year-old kid with, you're going.
I don't have to reach up there to press it.
You know, right.
I can just keep my hand right here on my armrest.
Yeah. And what it was nice, it was tailgating because you could control everything. You'd be like, oh, you don't like this song? Let me hit shuffle on my 12 disc changer.
Yeah, check me out.
It's like, yeah, it was the stuff that we did. But like you said, that was the natural progression. And that's, I've talked to more people like that, especially on the podcast, of that we all, it seems like we all started in that car audio. Like you said, it's like, you laid it out perfectly. It's that natural progression that once you get into the home, but then you forget about the car at that point because now you're just like, oh, I just want to do the home thing. And like, and that there's so many more places to go in the home. It just seems like there's more longevity of evolution in the home. But I will say every now and then when I'm in a Best Buy or something, I'll wander over to the car audio section and just look around and be like, not the same.
Those were the days.
Those were the days, but it's not the same anymore. No. You see, you know, you go.
All those manufacturers went away. You know, I remember, you know, the PPI and the Extant and the Soundstorm, Rockford Fosgate, and the Kicker.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and some of them, you know, JL Audio's moved into a lot of this. I shouldn't say they've gone away, but they've all changed. And
Dynamat.
And oh, yeah. I put in a ton of Dynamat in my Mustang. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got pictures of my wife holding the heat gun while I'm rolling it out, you know.
The best part is like you spend all this money on the exhaust to make it loud, then you spend all this money on Dynamat so you don't have to hear
it. Keep it quiet. You
know. So stupid.
Yeah.
It's so funny. It's like, I need this louder. So, all right, I'm out of amplifier options. So what's next? Dynamat.
But, you know, is it any different than the acoustic treatments? Yeah, well, it is different, but
it is.
You know, are you trying to keep sound in or out of a home theater? Are you trying to adjust the way the sound reflects inside of the home theater? Are you trying to keep heating and air conditioning noise down in the home theater? And there's a lot of the basics that you learn from early days, you know, translate into this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's not a coincidence either that we're all tinkerers. We see something and want to do something with it. Like, how, you know what I mean? Like, you got in your car.
I can hook that up.
Yeah, exactly. And part of it to me is it's, you're a tinkerer and like, I knew kids that would just pay somebody. They had, their families had the money to be like, oh, they got the new Mustang and then they got a custom stereo put into it and check this out. And they loved it. And I'm like, I want that, but I can't pay for that, so I have to learn to do it myself.
Isn't that true of a lot of, you know, the trailer queen hot rod owners that are roll up into a show with a car that somebody else built, somebody else painted, somebody else did the interior, you know, for them, right? As opposed to, hey, I built this car myself, right? It's just a different breed. And, you know, some have time, some have money. You know, what are you going to put into it?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I always thought, like, the people, those, they don't appreciate it. They just, you know what I mean? They just get it and be like, yeah, this is what you get. I'm like, oh, yeah, but we know, look at what I did.
Would you rather they that or somebody who's not into it at all.
Sure.
Right? So, you know, maybe you wrote a check for it, but at least you're still in the hobby or the
industry. Absolutely. Absolutely. But yeah, but we, like, I liked, and that's probably annoying to the to people where you're like, yeah, but look at what I did here. And you're like leaning under the dash and you're showing them stuff, connections you made and everything. And you're like, yeah, yeah, that's great. But can you get it to play? Oh yeah. Give me a minute.
Well, let me figure this out.
Yeah. You hit a bump. Oh, that connection came out. I'd had that happen.
I have too.
You're driving down the road, but where'd the radio go? Oh no. My first car, the radio went out when I turned left. Okay.
what was your first exposure to audio video for the home?
My first exposure?
And I'll tell you mine. So
yeah,
I remember my dad back in early 80s bought our first VCR. And it was you know, one of these pop top VCRs that you put the tape into and, you know, hooked it up, and it was kind of a paradigm shift, the idea that you could now record a program and watch it later, that you didn't have to sit through commercials, that you could now rent movies. I remember, you know, we rented, I think Rambo First Blood was the first movie we ever rented on VHS. I remember going into, you know, the electronic stores, and they had that kind of meat counter with, like, you know, 50 movies that you could rent. And that was all the movies there were to choose from to rent.
Right.
But that was a, you know, a big change. I'm like, oh, you can get electronics that will improve your life, that will change something for you, that add to the experience. And I think ever since then, you know, I was the one who could figure out how to program the time recording for my parents, or
the VCR,
you know, the dials on the top to set the analog tuners for each channel one at a time. But yeah, it was
big
expense at the time.
Yeah. I remember when we bought our VCR, I remember the store we went to, and it was a big event for the family to go down, and I was the oldest. I was probably 14 years old. It was around 84, 85, maybe I was 15 years old. And, you got a free, VHS tape with your purchase of your VCR at this store, boutique, whatever. And, they gave us, Beverly Hills Cop. So
see, I thought you were going to say Thriller.
No, they gave you, we got Beverly Hills Cop. And I remember, like, a year later, my parents were like, here, you can just have this. And I got to keep, and I just watched that over and over and over.
I remember, we used to rent a movie when we were kids, and, you know, you'd finish watching, you know, Chuck Norris or Missing in Action or whatever it was. And, like, as soon as the movie's over, like, what do you want to do? Let's watch it again.
Yeah.
And rewind, I'll start it over.
Yeah. Yeah. And rewinding, like, you had to sit there and wait. And you're like, and then. Yeah, you had to hit rewind it just and then bring it back. Otherwise, you know, when you got it back, if you didn't rewind it, there was like a dollar charge or something. And
I remember the first VHS of Star Wars my mom ever was able to rent. I'm like, how do we keep this tape? You know, I remember going back into Blockbuster, like, can I have, how much if I don't return this? Those are $99. I'm like, $99? Yeah. It's like a fortune. How would I ever pay for something like this?
Yeah, and they were. They were a lot of money. VHS was a lot of money. And I've talked about it in the past. I'm like, I've gotten pushback on it, but I was working in a video store at the time, but it was ET, and it was sponsored by Pepsi. Mm-hmm. And that was the first buy to own. And it was like, I think it was $19.99 or $24.99, whatever it was. But when I was in the store, it was a big deal because we got a crap load of them, and you had to price them all out and everybody. But that was the beginning of the evolution.
Collecting of movies.
But it was kind of twofold too, because before that, I think that was, so we were allowed to collect for $24, $19. You could own it, but there wasn't as much of a need to collect it. Because now the stores were buying it cheaper, so they would overbuy. So you never had a problem after that. Shortly after that, it took a little while, like a couple of years, but stores would then buy like 50 copies of the hot movie, right? And they would rent them, rent them, rent them, rent them. And then when the rental died down,
dump them.
they'd dump them. They'd sell them like used tapes, and they would sell them for 10 bucks a piece, but they had already made all their money back on the rental. So there was less of a need for people like us. There was less of a need to collect them because they were readily available at the store.
Yeah. But I remember buying my first box set of Star Trek, or, you know, going into Sundance Video and buying the widescreen version of, you know, The Abyss or whatever the movie was, that you couldn't rent that. That was kind of like, unique.
And that's where I think those special features came out for people like us, is like the VHS, you'd get the standard one that people would, you know, you could rent that, but they were trying to attract us, right? You can rent that one, but buy this one here.
Yeah, so you should own this.
Yeah.
This is more exclusive.
Exactly. So it was really, it's funny. It's like, if you think back to that was kind of like the early days of like what we're getting on streaming now. It's like completely readily available here, but they're still trying to attract collectors with steelbooks and with.
So let me ask you this question. How many times have you bought Star Wars? I know you're a huge Star Wars fan, so. How many formats have you bought it in? And I know you don't have anything against the double dipping and the rebuying, but
none. I want to say every. I used to be able to say every, but then I've seen people online that they'll buy like the Japanese version. They'll buy every, you know, and I didn't own it on. There's
about
a couple
on Super 8.
Did I buy Super 8? Yes.
Because so, he had bought almost every version of Star Wars that had come out. Big fan and collector. And, you know, the abridged version where they couldn't fit the whole movie on the cassette, where it had, was like missing scenes, you know, the Laserdisc, the VHS, the reissue of the VHS, the DVD, the Blu-ray, the 4K version, the Kaleidoscape version. You know, I've bought this movie too many times, but I keep buying it. So
yeah, I buy it just to support it. I mean, true. Especially now,
speak with your wallet.
Right. And I buy it to support it. And I would love for them, by all means, come out with my buddy, John, and I say all the time, like, they've got to be doing it. They've got to be working on it. Come out with a 100% restored, remastered, unaltered.
Sure.
They get $100 easily.
Oh, wait.
I mean, 99 for a movie. I would, because we would, I don't know if they're doing it that way on purpose, if they're doing it at all, but I'm like, right now, if it came up on, you know, buy it now, you know, 100% 4K restored with
non-McClunky version.
Non-McClunky version. 100% like with, but I want it. What I think would be really cool would be to have all the different, especially with our theaters now, imagine if they could put it out with Atmos. With all these different audio tracks on it, Atmos, all the way back to the lowest version that they would give to the theaters back in 77. So in 77, there was the, what is it, the 35 millimeter and the 70 millimeter. But to get the 70 mil, you had to have Dolby surround sound installed in your theater to be able to get the 70 millimeter cut with the six
tracks. Right, which is where THX came out of for Empire, right? I mean, that was Jedi, but
yeah,
when, you know, Lucas wasn't happy with what the theaters were doing with his art to as they were reproducing it, and that's where they went into the theaters and said, you need to be able to hit these levels at this volume, you know,
yes,
with this frequency range, all that.
Right. It really was a progression, because that's what, in 77, he was like, all right, I'm going to just distributed in at 35 with, which I think was it a stereo track that could be up to the four channel. And then I think when you went to the 70 millimeter, you got a six track audio, and I might be off on that, but I know that there was a substantial upgrade in audio sound when you went to the 70 millimeter, but you had to have Dolby surround installed in your theater. Then it was later on, like you said, with the THX, where he's like, now I'm going to come in and I want your systems tweaked to the specs that we want this playing at the volume levels we want it playing at. And that kind of set everybody off on basically what we have, I believe, is reference level now. And it was going all through that, which is what the basis of our theaters are, what the basis of what we get at a theater. And that's how you know, I always use the movie The Doors as a reference, because without a reference level, you don't know why that movie sounded so loud. And they mixed it that loud on purpose, knowing that your theaters would be playing it at a certain level. I've had this conversation before. I'm surprised they don't do this in the music industry at all. There's no reference whatsoever for any kind of their formats. So everybody's just like, when you hear a CD or a song, you don't know why it's loud, or did they, it's weird. If you don't have a reference, how do you know what you're hearing is good? You know what I mean?
No, I agree.
But yeah, so as far as all the formats on Star Wars, it's like, I want to say, like I said, all of them, and I want more. I honestly want more of them. Do you use it like I do for your, like, if you upgrade a piece, you go to that? It's like, that's my go-to because I know it so well.
It's probably not that for me, but I enjoy watching it. You know, it's shown it to the kids, and, you know, they've all grown up with that stuff. So just, it's a family favorite.
Yeah. What's your reference piece? What's a piece, like, if you reference, like, you get a new receiver and you want to hear, you want to...
So there are some, you know, test discs and things like that that I'll use from a clinical evaluation standpoint, but I don't know if there's a single movie or scene that I'll use to... It's kind of whatever is the new hotness, right? Whatever is going to give me... I'll listen to a piece and then listen to it on the new gear.
So you're more of an engineer guy. You
before
like that
and after.
You like, yeah, you like that, the test discs and the sound.
I have them just for reference. You know, it's, you talk about you need something. I've got my old Iasca sound quality discs stacked up in the back of my rack somewhere. So yeah, I have that stuff.
Yeah. That's cool. That's cool.
Let me ask you this.
Okay.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I have to use my familiar
the piece, you know.
Yeah. And it's like,
well, and that's,
yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. The more familiar you are with it, the more you can pick out what's there, what's not there. Right.
Yeah.
So I was going to say, how many movies are you up to on your Kaleidoscape?
What am I up to?
Yeah.
60.
And have you?
Something.
Okay. That's a great start.
60. Yeah. I was like, it's been what, a little, almost 2 months, I think.
Right.
It was the beginning of March. So yeah, I'm coming up on 2 months.
And have you done any of the disc to digital stuff yet?
No, not yet.
You've got to.
I know. Well, what's funny is, you know, Nelson, he was on earlier. I think he was my first guest, if I remember right. He has a Kaleidoscape, and he was living in Jersey at the time. And he just recently moved up. He's now an hour away from me, and he has an Alto. So he's like,
there you go.
Yeah. And he's like, he told me too. He's like, stop buying.
I think I emailed you that a while back.
Yeah, you did too. Yeah, you said it.
That same movie that you're paying $24 for, you could be paying, you know, $4.95 for, whatever.
I know.
Because you've already bought the disc, right? You already own it. It's in your library. Now you're just up converting it from the DVD or Blu-ray to the 4K.
Right. And I think I think Nelson pointed out to me, like, I can upload it, but not necessarily upload the movie to my hard drive. I can just say, like, okay, now
right.
I have
it goes into your collection, and then the price comes down when it's in the store for you.
Right. So I don't have to buy it, but now it's in my collection. So the price
is changed. I've put 600 plus movies from my disc collection. I'm looking over here because there's racks and racks of movies behind me. So the system knows I own all of those movies, whether or not I bought them and put them on my Kaleidoscape. But since I have my Alto still attached to my system, all of them come up. And it'll just say insert disc to play.
Oh.
So I can see my entire movie collection on there.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's pretty cool. Because, yeah, I know Kaleidoscape does that whole, they actually will, I think, will let you borrow. They have a borrow program or something like that.
Right. You can get one of the, And
somebody I know, I think they were on
Kaleidoscape Owners Forum. There's some guys out there also who will loan them out.
Yeah. Somebody like that. I can't remember who it was. I think it was a listener on the that was on the podcast said he borrowed an Alto through Kaleidoscape, uploaded all the stuff, and then you just ship it off to the next person that's going to borrow it. So
right.
That's pretty cool. That's really cool. I know the other thing somebody told me is that Disney doesn't really participate very well with that. The price doesn't come down as substantially? Like
it varies by studio, right? Whether it's right. Warner Brothers or Paramount or Disney, whoever it is, some of them are great, some of them are, you know, it's a couple of bucks. So instead of $24.95, it's $21.95 for maybe right. a Disney piece.
For Disney.
But and I don't know, some of the Disney stuff I've rebought, but few and far between. It's been a lot more of the bigger, you know, sci-fi or stuff that I owned for years on DVD that I upgraded on into 4K at a minimal cost. So let me ask you this. What are your thoughts on streaming versus local, whether it's on disc or on Kaleidoscape, right? How's your, what's your experience been?
Not even close. Streaming is nice. Streaming is getting better, but it can't really, there is a big difference.
To me, it's all about removing variables, right?
Correct. Absolutely.
Whether if I'm streaming, I don't know who else is on my network. I don't know who in my neighborhood is online right now. I don't know what my bandwidth is I'm getting. And it's a variable that I can never factor out when I'm looking at the performance of my system. Right. So I was in a class, Dennis Erskine was teaching, and he said he's not going to build a theater without a disc player in it because when someone complains and says, my theater doesn't sound as good as it should. Well, what are you watching? Well, you know, I'm watching my Apple TV. He's like, well, can you put the disc in and then call me back after you've seen,
right.
You know, is it doing what it's supposed to? Because the digital backbone between here and Netflix, you have no idea what's
right
in between. And that's, I like streaming. We use it all the time. You know, I've got an Apple TV in the family room. I got one in the theater. But if I want to critically evaluate something, or if I want to get the best experience out of my gear, you need to remove the variable of what's your best source, right? And that's
right.
One of the reasons that I've, you know, my Oppo 203 now sits mostly dormant as most of the things have gone on to the Kaleidoscape.
Yeah, I had the Oppo, and then I upgraded, and I do consider it an upgrade because of what the Panasonic 820 does. It with what it did at the time.
The tone mapping.
Tone mapping. Well, it's more of a optimizer is what it does. So what I liked, that was nice. But now when I went to the Zapiti, everything just goes right. If I get a disc, it goes right onto my hard drive. And then I can always pull it up off of the Zapiti. But now with the Kaleidoscape, I'm like, I used the Zapiti the other day and I went on to it and I was like, oh, this is great, but it's still so clunky compared to the other one. But it's like, but streaming, I'll say what I like about streaming is I think it's a great entry point for home theater people. You can get a fairly large collection. If you're a home theater person that, if you think you're evolving into, like you said, a critical viewer or critical listener, then you need to step up to physical at least. Right. And then, you know, obviously, I mean, I love my Kaleidoscape, but you don't have to go to Kaleidoscape. I think physical is the way to go. Physical is
a great way to go. Absolutely.
Right.
And what's funny, it's a generational thing also in that my kids don't own any music.
No.
Right? They listen to music all the time,
right.
But I know I've got 500 CDs sitting in drawers over there that I'm not using anymore. They've all moved on to Apple, whatever. But I remember those big Logic Tech cases of audio cassettes that used to be in the back seat of the car.
Yeah.
We'd switch from tape to tape to tape, right?
Yeah.
And then somebody stole that out, and then I switched to CDs and started listening to CDs. So there was always an ownership aspect of music and or what became, I think, ownership of movies that was a part of collecting and owning and possessing, you know, my version or my copy of this. My kids, they're, you know, they'll listen to it on Pandora, you know, whatever streaming service that they want. They're all on Apple, but it's just not the same. You know, they enjoy it, they love it, but it's not the same connection to it, I don't think.
No, it's like you said before.
And I think, and one of your other guests mentioned this, is that I used to, on Black Fridays, you know, look for deals on the 4K discs. If I buy, you know, a stack of movies for Christmas for the family, everyone would be getting movies that they liked or I liked or whatever it was. And with the Kaleidoscape, a lot of that's gone away, right?
Yeah.
So there's I still own it. I have a digital version of it. It's in my system. It's in a perfect condition, but the physical aspect of it's gone away. So,
right,
better or worse, you know, that's just the way things move.
Well, here's what's interesting. This is kind of home theater, but a slight tangent, but I think it really does pertain to home theater. And you mentioned it before with the brick and mortars going away, we're losing what was fun about buying physical media was going to the place to buy the physical media, running into other people, talking to other people there about the physical media we were choosing, right? One of my favorite memories, like I've said on the podcast, my Laserdisc still smelled like the store that I used to buy them in. I loved Dave. He taught me so much. And it was an event. It was a fun part of my week to walk and drive to the store, walk in and hang out for a couple hours and talk home theater. So we missed that part. But because we're getting everything digitally, because that world has just evolved, I'm now talking to you.
Right. True. Right. It's this conversation instead of, you know,
so
couldn't you say the same thing about comics, digging through the back bins of issues of,
but
you
can still do that. That's true. What's kind true. Of fun is you can still, and that's why it's a shame it went the other way. But I think the reason comic book stores still survive is we do all, I could do my banking without going to the bank, but I actually go to the bank because I just want to see the people. And it's like,
you're friends with the tellers, DJ?
They actually, yeah, I walk in and they go, hi, DJ. And it's, okay. they do. It's like,
you need to get out more.
What's that?
You need to get out more.
I'm out all the time. That's the thing. But here's, you know what? It's sad is I work by myself. When I go to work, I'm literally in a parking lot by myself. I go and I'll go into a dealership. I'll get the keys for the cars. I get the cars and then I'll spend hours just by myself working on these cars. And then I go home and I drive. Driving to work and driving back home, you're by yourself in the car. I'm like that all day long.
I spent 10 years working in high tech and about half of that working from home, where I went from, you know, working in a cubicle surrounded by coworkers and talking to them at lunch and all that kind of stuff to, you know, me sitting next to the cat at home working on a computer. So there is somewhat of an isolation in working by yourself, but
yeah, I hear you. And that's for many, many years, I was listening to sports radio, and that was like who I was, you know, those were my coworkers, right? That was my interaction. And I'd be like yelling at the radio, like, you idiot, you're wrong, blah, blah, blah. And then I went to podcasts. Late to the game on that. One small regret, wish I'd started listening earlier, but yeah. So what's funny is I am not a people person at all. Back when we used to go out, I'd be like, I don't like people. I get out and I
want to be around crowds.
Yeah. But then when things start happening, like, and this was all before COVID. I mean, I think a lot of people realize how nice it is to be out and about once COVID hit. But this was all before COVID. I would go to the bank, and it just, I think it was the evolution of what happened with my job. And I've been doing that for I've been doing this job for 25 years now. Mm-hmm. And it just makes you want to, when you don't have it, you realize how much you appreciate it and need it.
Really. You don't miss it till it's gone. Yeah.
Correct. And so it was, but it was, I always did like going to the stores, like out here it was Suncoast Video, or mm-hmm. going to a Blockbuster and getting, you know, picking out your rental when you were a kid, or going to your mom and pop rental store. Like I
worked at Mr. Video for a time. You know, I remember going to Hollywood Video, and that was one of the few places you could still rent Laserdisc back in the day.
Yeah.
I remember, you know, walking the aisles of Blockbuster, and they had an emergency phone where you could call home and say, hey, have we seen this, or do you want to watch this movie tonight?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I've never seen that. That's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool. Yeah. I worked at we had Super Stop and Shop, and they had a video section. It was at the mm-hmm. front of the store. And I worked there for like 4 years when I was in college, worked there in the summers and then nights when I was in college. And, it's working in the video stores, working, doing all that and meeting all those, talking to like-minded people, But like I said, it's a trade-off. It's like, we're not getting that, but we're getting this, you know? And it's like, I get to talk to you on the other side of the country and meeting all these people. So, I mean,
well, and I think that that has to do with, again, the niche that we're into, right? That it was, I remember listening to HT guys for years and years. Well, that's one of the only places that I could find an interaction where they were talking about home theater stuff,
right?
You know, the stuff I was interested in. And I think you see more of that with the internet, with social media. You know, you're on a lot of these forums or user groups or that are just talking about the stuff that you're into. And that's been a big change from, you know, only having three channels to watch on TV, right? So it's just an evolution.
Yeah. And I think it's all of this is, it's cultivated better content, right? Because if you watch some of the stuff that we watched back when there were only three channels, the competition wasn't as high, right? You didn't have as much, we can put this show on after this show. There was a lot of, you know, mapping out on how we're going to do it. Like, well, this show isn't very good, but people don't typically get, there was no remote control. So
we're going to change the channel.
Yeah. We start you off at prime time at 8 o'clock with a great show. And that'll carry us right through to the news. And they'll watch all the way to Johnny Carson because nobody wants to get up and change the channel, right?
Have you heard the term connoisseurship, right? The idea that whether you're into cigars or scotch or home theater or whatever it is, that you go from a very wide audience to a smaller and smaller, more dedicated, more interested, higher spending group who are focusing more of their time and resources and becoming an expert in things. So I've seen that in home theater also, that for the masses, a sound bar might be good enough. And they think, you know, 75 inch TV is the biggest one they're ever going to see in their life. I'm like, okay, yeah, my 130 inch screen was four times that size, but that's right. Okay. So it's just, you get people who are getting, you know, more and more stratified and you're into a smaller group section of the funnel.
Yeah. Yeah, and it creates more competition. So we get better TVs out of that. We get better content out of that because it's like, I want, you know, the consumer becomes more demanding as they become more, you'll have, like, we even going back to like we were just saying about the VHS. Well, here's the rental version, but now here's the collector's
edition. Right.
So,
and I think one of the benefits of streaming is they've brought longer form content to the audience also, right? Instead of watching one great 2-hour movie, you can watch 10 episodes or a season of, you know, the first season of True Detective was an amazing storyline.
Right.
Some of the best actors and very well written. That's something that you couldn't have evolved. To put that into one 2-hour movie you would have lost a lot, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And you do lose a lot. And now it's the movies. In my opinion, I'd love to hear what you think about it. My opinion, the movies have become secondary.
So I just saw Doctor Strange on
Friday
night. Loved it. Great movie. A lot of fun. It was really exciting to have another big Marvel movie to take one of my kids to, in a theater, you know, and sit down and spend too much on popcorn and soda. And we watched it and enjoyed it and talked about it afterwards. And now I got to wait, you know, how many months until the next one comes out.
Right.
Whereas I think that a lot of the, what you can get from streaming, whether it's Netflix or Amazon or HBO Max, you know, those series, and depending on how they drop them, right? Disney, you know, Moon Knight was, you know, one episode a week with a lot of their shows. So yes, can you, and it depends on when you start consuming it also, right? Are you there for episode one or do you wait for the whole thing to be available and you want to be able to binge it?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And you get the options. But what I think is nice is like you said, it's like Doctor Strange. I really enjoyed it. Same as you. I'm like, I thought, I don't understand these negative reviews. It was getting bashed at the beginning. I think it's kind of slowed down a little bit because people are actually seeing it and going, what are they talking about? But
it was definitely one of the more horror type. I mean,
yeah. You could
zombies definitely, and it's a little scarier.
It was funny. My son I've seen it twice now because I saw it on opening day. My son couldn't make it. He couldn't get out of work in time. I had bought two tickets, but I was like, oh, well. Then we saw it again Saturday. And I saw it again, and he went, and he was funny. He goes, I kind of wish it was rated R, because it was, it would have been like a more horror vibe, right? Way like scarier, gorier. And I was like, but you'll never get an MCU movie as a rated R, because it would ruin the timeline for the masses, for the, because people want, like you said, you want to be able to take your kids and you to take a 12-year-old to a rated R movie, but now that kid won't be part of that timeline, to, because these all are part of a larger story.
True.
Right. So I was like, he goes, yeah, but it would be fun. I go, maybe we'll get it on disc. What do you think of that? Do you think you could get an unrated one from Sam Raimi?
Potentially. I can see that. Sure.
Yeah. Cause it, and, I don't want to talk spoilers, but did you notice a bunch of different like nods to other horror movies in this?
Especially with Sam Raimi. And then, so yeah, so, you know, there was a Bruce Campbell character in there. Yeah, so yeah. Yeah, there was definitely, bits and pieces of other movies of his.
Yeah. And but I thought they were bits and pieces of other movies, horror movies in general. And mm-hmm. I don't want to give them away, but I thought like just the horror genre, I thought he did a few nods to. The other thing that I like, speaking of comic books, one thing I liked about this movie is I thought, and it was, it answered a huge question for me, in that the MCU is huge. We're approaching 30 movies now. This is the first movie where you don't have to have seen any other movie, and it feels like a new jumping off point. Yep.
Yeah.
But the new jumping off point for the next saga.
Okay.
Right.
So I'm of two minds about this. One, I've really liked the entire, you know, 23 movies that led up to Endgame, mm-hmm. you know, owned all of those, saw all of those in theaters. And they made one large cohesive story that all worked together and all interlocked, right? Mm-hmm. But you run into this problem, whether it's Marvel or DC, that at some point it gets too convoluted, right? You've got your golden era characters or your silver age, and mm-hmm. you end up having to have Crisis on Infinite Earths to cram all those back into one cohesive storyline. Then that 20 years later, you have to get the new 52 and do it all over again, right? Because the authors spread this stuff out mm-hmm. all over the place, and then it gets too messy. So I'm concerned with, you know, will that happen with the multiverse, with your MCU movies? Hard to say.
Right. But what I noticed in Doctor Strange, the latest Doctor Strange, is that it feels to me like if you're new to the, jump on, watch this movie. If you really like it, there's going to be more added on to, more storyline to this. And it's very, I mean, almost mirror image of what they do in the comics, where mm-hmm. they'll have a new story come out where if you're new to it, you don't need to have read anything else before, but here's all the
start
information.
Here. It's an entry point.
Right. It's a great entry point. If you want to learn more, like there's a few name drops and stuff in Multiverse of Madness that you'll, hey, I want to go back and see what happened. I want to see what he's talking about here in the past. So I think we might be seeing, in my opinion, we might be seeing, this is the first one that's like this. And what if it's like 30, 40 years from now, these movies are like comics and that you can jump in at any time because they have to keep generating this for generations. Otherwise it's like you said, it's going to be very difficult. Like how are you going to watch the 40th movie if you haven't seen the other 39?
Right.
And it looked like Multiverse of Madness was, it actually pulled it off to me.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
And that is going to bode well for like home theater stuff in the future. Like people will be collecting these movies. Like say they, you know, the end of this run, they do it again and there's a new jumping on point. People are going to, hey, I'll go back and I'll watch that. Or like Disney Plus, it's selling Disney Plus. It's selling all of this home theater content that people are going to want to do. And I just think it's really interesting to me because they're kind of mirroring the comic book industry, but using comic books, of course, but it's going to be selling home theater. It's going to be selling all this content in your home, and it's more expensive than comics, right, but still fun.
And talk about, you know, voting with your wallet, that mm-hmm. this content needs to be paid for in order for them to create more of it, for us to be able to enjoy our gear and our theaters. Right. So I've always had an issue with people who would, you know, pirate or download or not pay for all of the effort that went in, that Hollywood put into making these things, and think, you know, it's always going to be there. Well, it's not always going to be there if everybody doesn't put money into the banks that pay those people salaries, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And it's talking about that. Like, I got into that, researching a lot of that with the Zapiti, because I was worried about, like, what am I doing? Am I doing something? Am I really doing something wrong here?
Right. It falls into the legal backup category, right? If it's for your own personal use,
depending on the country. Yeah. It's there. It's, that's very, in the United States, supposedly it's very sketchy. Like, I don't, I think in the United States they could actually, I think you're not even allowed to do that. But from what I understand, talking to people that have been, that are in the industry or making the products and stuff, like I actually talked to a guy at Kaleidoscape. I've talked, not Kaleidoscape, I'm sorry, Zapiti, and talked about this stuff. And they're like, well, they have all the, like, the studios are allowing them to produce this product. Nobody's going after them. Nobody's going after us.
And well, the studios went after Kaleidoscape at one time, right?
I mean, at Kaleidoscape, yes, a long time. Right. But what, at that time, when they went after them, Kaleidoscape was basically doing what Napster did. And that could have hurt.
Letting you, yeah, you could have, in that time, taken a DVD from your friend, put it into your system and copy it, right?
Right.
And that's why they went to a whole jukebox of, you know, Blu-ray containers. And then that's what eventually led them into the content distribution model of the store and where they are now.
Exactly. And basically they did with movies what iTunes ended up doing. iTunes basically copied Napster, but was like, okay, you can just buy it from pick.
Legitimized it.
They legitimized it. Right. And that's where Kaleidoscape is today, with where they legitimized it. And then Zapiti, they're doing it like you can back up your physical media, but you can't share it from there. You can't,
and with the disc to digital, I feel like I'm doing the same thing. Whereas it's going to take you how long to put a movie into the Zapiti and rip it? Well, with me, it takes, you know, 30 seconds to drop a movie in, recognize that I own it, and then I can go download it from the store whenever I want.
See, I didn't know that. Nelson pointed that out to me. No. Nelson had pointed it out to me. I was like, so how long does it take? He goes, no, it literally goes in, spins it, and spits it back out to you. I was like, he goes, yeah, you could do your collection in a day. I was like, oh.
But it's a long day of pressing buttons and moving discs, but yeah.
But I love that.
Right. Well, so
you know, just get a comfy chair, sit. And you could do it anywhere, because once in your house, if you have an Ethernet connection, you could just set it up next to you on the couch and be like,
put it on the desk. And
And it's so it could be done. I'm already saving up. I'm already shopping for my next. I know I'm not really shopping. I know what it is, but I want to get the 24. I think I'll be done with a 24 terabyte server.
Yeah, I said the same thing once upon a time.
What are you up to?
So I've got the Alto that has 4, and I'm looking at them over there in the rack of gear. I've got an older Strato with 10, and I've got the Tero with 24. And I think I've got room left for maybe 120 more movies. So it'll take me a little while, but
So how
knocking on the door?
Yeah,
it's so 38 terabytes right now.
So, well, that's about what I'm looking to do. If I go to a Tera 24, I have 12 in a 24, sure. So I'd be at 36, and I'm like,
yeah, so that's like 600 movies or so.
Yeah, and it's like on my, I have like 600 movies now on my on the Speedy.
And well, so the goal is, you know, when I win the lottery, I'm just going to buy 10 of the 72 terabytes and just download the whole store and just have it all local.
Well, that's the thing is if you win the lottery, you just download as you need, right? You'd be like, all right, 10 minutes away. Okay. at a good, I've found that I get that 10 minute. I've gotten that 10 minute download a few times, but I have to plan it better. Like if you,
During the beginning of the pandemic, when I had, you know, two or three at home doing school from home, my wife working from home, myself working from home, I had to limit when I would download a movie, right? Because, well, the first month we went over our one whatever terabyte cap. And then, we had 200 megs. So we had to go to the 400 meg and, you know, kept upping the bandwidth requirements for school, work, and entertainment.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the Terra, the downloading through the Terra is just, it sucks the bandwidth out of the house.
Oh yeah. It'll pull data.
Yeah. It pulls. It's pretty amazing piece of tech, I think. Mm-hmm. The way I've never seen anything pull that much data that fast in my house anyways. It's like, I'm like, the whole house slows down. And you're like, what?
It's like the lights dim.
Oh yeah. Well, you're like, cause we stream everything, you know, we're working, all our TVs are off Apple TVs. My son's video game, everything's through the network on the house. So when you download a movie, you're like, all of a sudden you're watching TV and it just becomes pixelated. You're like, uh-oh. I'm like, oh, sorry about that. Let me pause this. Cause maybe it's the one I'm not going to watch right away. So I'll just pause it and put it on later. But
so I do, my downloads are all scheduled, you know, midnight till 6 a.m. now. So it just,
oh, really?
Sucks bandwidth all night. And then I'll go online and I'll buy, you know, 10 or 12 movies and I'll just stack them up and let them download when they're ready.
Yeah. Yeah. I just did I finished off my Star Wars collection because they all went on sale.
On the sale.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I saw that and I was like, and
have you been buying anything you don't own physically yet?
Yeah, well, I got, No Way Home, you know, yep. I have, Ambulance, not out yet. I bought,
Black Widow was the first of the Marvel movies that I never bought physically. I just bought it from the store. And so that one was interesting too. You know, it's not going up on a shelf after, you know, I own it.
Yeah, it is.
Transition.
It's weird. I will buy them. I will get out and buy them. Because that part of me, I want it in the collection because I have the Marvel movies all in a row.
I've been selling off my 4K discs.
Have you?
Because, really? You know, I probably had, you know, 60, 80 of them and I'm not going to go back and watch it on the disc once I have it on the Keyscape. So it's kind of like, okay, if I sell this, I can buy some more movies.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. I don't know. Part of me still likes to have that collection sitting there, that piece just in the backdrop or whatever as you walk in. But there is something, I do think I'll get to where you're at eventually. I don't know, they come out with
guys with albums, right? You know, yeah. I like owning the album. I'm like, okay,
I still have all my Lady discs,
right? Well, I sold those a while ago.
I don't know.
And I should say that's
time.
That's something that's the audio and the gear. And, you know, I've bought and sold a ton of stuff, right? I used to go on Craigslist, find somebody who's selling their home theater. They're moving, or, you know, they got a divorce or whatever. So I would buy all of their gear and then I'd part it out. I'd keep whatever pieces of it I want. And then I'd sell the rest of it to people on eBay or Craigslist and pay to buy more gear with it. Right. So there's almost nothing in my rack of equipment over there that I didn't buy used.
It's just really,
because it was cheaper. Yeah. So between the two Marantz amps were both on eBay. The Marantz preamp was on Craigslist. The Kaleidoscape stuff was through forums. The Oppo was brand new. TiVo was on Craigslist. The Xbox, I think one of those, one was from work, one was new. And then the power conditioners, I think I bought used also. And the Middle Atlantic rack, it's all in, you know, that's like probably $1,000 rack that I gave somebody $100 for, but on Craigslist that didn't, you know, it just takes, you know, you have time or you have money, right? What do you want to put into this?
Right. Thing? And that's for me, it's, I don't have the time to, I've never been in that world. I remember you offered me to borrow your Kaleidoscape and I was what? And what did I say to you though? I was like,
Yeah, well, you said you had somebody close by anyways, which was
funny. I had Nelson. He offered me too, and Brett was trying to get me, a demo, and I was like, I don't want it. I don't want it until I can own it. Cause I don't want to tease the crap out of myself and then never be able to get it or have to give it back. Right.
Right.
So I was just like, I can't do that. I'm like,
but see, all the gear is transient, right? I mean, it's like, you can love a piece of gear. It's neat to have it. You own it, but at some point it's going to be outdated. At some point you're going to buy something new.
Yeah. I did that recently. I did that with my last projector. I sold it when I got my Sony. Yep. I did it with the receiver when my Onkyo Atmos receiver, when I got the Denon. And then I sold my Oppo. I sold the Oppo 203 to pay for the Zepedi because I was never using the Oppo anymore because I was running the Panasonic. And I'm like, I got $1,400 for the Oppo. And I was right. Like, okay. Like, it paid for my Zepedi and the NAS. Helped pay for the NAS.
So I had a boss of mine that said, and this is when I was in the industry, said, don't ever buy gear for more than you can sell it for later on. Right? So, you know, we would always... And it was when you're in the industry, it's a different situation. Try not to pay retail whenever possible. But, you know, if you could buy an amplifier or a set of speakers or whatever it was for, you know, dealer costs or what have you, then whenever you're done using it, you can sell it for basically what you paid for it, put it into a new piece of gear.
Yeah. And I'm trying to do that. My problem is I'm too...
I want it now.
Yes. Yes, I get an idea. It's like, you know what? You know why I bought my Sony? My projector?
Because it was available?
It was available. I was listening to HT guys. And they were like, Sony, the Sony 295 on sale on Amazon right now. I was at work. I had their
4K for under 5K, right?
That whole thing. And it was like $4,500, I think. I went on Amazon right away. I was like, click. I was like, bought it. And, and the other thing is they were offering 0% for 4 months. Mm-hmm. So I was like, done. I was like, all right.
Pay that off.
Yeah, it's easy. Instead of charging me all at once, I just pay the, you know, four-time payment. All right, done. So I did it, and I was like, and that was right before I started the podcast.
Yeah, so having been married now 27-plus years, my wife always kind of said, you can do whatever you want with your hobby as long as it doesn't come out of household funds, right? So that's where kind of this whole thing about buying and trading and upgrading, has always come from. But I've rolled into places with 12 grand in my pocket buying gear that, you know, you're just like, okay, better hope this all turns when I expect it to. And, you know, that's a lot of cash.
Yeah, that's – my buddy did that with cars.
Right. You can flip them. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and that's – I get too attached to stuff. I'm a very more of a collector stuff. Like I said, I still have all my Laserdiscs. I get attached to these things. There is literally still a part of me that's a little upset I sold an Onkyo Atmos receiver. Like, there's a part of me that's just like
– I was really attached to our first JVC 36-inch HD, you know, CRT 300-pound TV, but when I put it out on the curb after it stopped working, it lost that attachment, I'll tell you.
Right. Oh, let me get back to that question you asked of now that you said that about the TV.
For sure.
You asked my first experience with...
What was your first piece of gear that had an impression on?
So my friend Robin, her family, they had a front projection, like... 60-inch television at the time, which in the 80s was like...
And had the three guns. Bulbs.
Yep, the three.
Down below, the RGB. Yeah.
Yep, exactly. And when I saw that...
I just wanted to play Duck Hunt on that thing.
Yeah, exactly. Didn't we all? We're like, all right, yeah, just you're like, hey, it's huge. That to me, coupled with we had cable... TV, so I had HBO. I was able to watch Star Wars. And
sorry, Labradors have just been let into my office. Ouch, nice. Ouch. Go, doggies.
Doggies. That coupled with the idea that I can watch Star Wars at home, that was, to me, in my head, I still remember the day walking into her house. I remember the living room. I remember it cornered in the living room. I know exactly where I was. And I remember thinking, if I could do, I could watch Star Wars like when I was at the theater. And I think to me, that was the birth of home theater for my, of where I got the idea of where we are now, you know, and then obviously everything's evolved since then. But that was the first time I'd ever seen something like that.
So I'll share another story with you. I remember being in college And, you know, they have these, like, traveling fairs where they'll come and promote things or, you know, try and get you to sign up for credit cards or memberships or what have you. But they were doing movie trailers. And they had this, like, it was kind of like a tent with, like, you know, really basic riser-type seating, two big PA speakers, and a screen. And I remember watching the trailer for Universal Soldier. And this was, you know, probably, you know, 90s or whatever it was. And I'm going, oh, my gosh, you could totally put this in a house. You know, just the idea that that's kind of like, I remember like this light bulb went off in my head that you don't have to go to the theater to see a movie, right? Star Wars or whatever.
Right.
And I wanted something much bigger than the, you know, the 27 inch TV the parents had at home or the, you know, 13 inch TV VCR combo I had in my dorm room or, and just, yeah, like this would be really cool. And then that kind of evolved, right? I remember going to EH Expo, which was one of the shows they used to do on the West Coast for manufacturers and people in the low voltage industry, and watching one of the guys calibrate, I think it was either a Runco projector on a Stewart screen with like a JBL Synthesis speaker package, and going, he was, I got there early the night before, and he was a friend of mine, and so he said, hey, come down, check this out, I'm setting stuff up, and we watched a scene from Star Wars Episode II where they're in the arena and the Jedi come and save, you know, and I remember watching the lightsabers light up on screen and they were so bright. It was like it just popped on this, you know, screen. I was going, oh my gosh, I need to get this at home. And I had been in the industry, you know, at that time. I remember my wife, when I was working in retail, I was working on the car audio side of a shop that had car and home. And I said, hey, I'll be done in, you know, half an hour or whatever. And she said, go over there and look at the home theater stuff for a little while. So she went over and she was watching Pearl Harbor in one of the demo rooms. And I walked in there. She's like, we really need to get something like this at home. And then so it's, you know, we love watching movies together. Now we have trouble agreeing on what movie we're going to watch on any given evening. But, so it's been a big part of the hobby.
Yeah, just that, like you said, a 27 inch television. That's where, like, I'd seen that 60 inch, but I knew I couldn't afford that. Those were super expensive back then. But then the way my mind's working, like, just let's build, let's start.
I remember had it in my bedroom. I remember going to Philco with my dad and testing tubes. You know, you take them out of the console TV and see, go check the tubes inside the store and see if they still are. In spec or whatever it was.
And I got to get to shows. I got to get, like you're talking, I've never been to any of them. Never been to one. I've always read about it. I remember reading about them in the 90s when I would read Home Theater Magazine and like just going to these shows. And I always just thought it was for the manufacturers and the dealers to go and schmooze and stuff, and I was like, I always just wanted to be a part of that world.
Some of the best demos you'll see, some you know, the JBL Synthesis demo at CEDIA is always very impressive. Wisdom Audio puts on a great demo, and they, you know, they'll build whole rooms in trade show booths. I remember seeing, you know, some of the Epson projectors for the first time at one of the shows in San Diego for CEDIA when they were down there, and it's awesome to go and check out and see the new gear that's coming, see what clips they choose, see what the experience is like, and then go home and see how, you know, either you're happy or disappointed that your system either stacks up or doesn't compare to what you got to witness there. I remember I'd write down the list of everything they chose to demo, you know, and I'd go home and I'd go put on this, or now I'll just put the same scenes from the Kaleidoscape and I'll just say, you know, okay, let's watch that scene from Lucy, or let's watch, you know, whatever it was that the Matrix in 4K that they were demoing at the show.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's, I mean, like I said, I never went to those shows, but I'd go to demo rooms. I'd go to different places, especially once
it's started. It's like a kid in a candy store.
Yeah. And it's funny because I started this podcast just before the pandemic. So all those shows went away because people started telling me, like, you should come out to the show. You should do this.
Okay. So here's my suggestion. You should take a bright side HT guys, AV Rant trip, and everyone go to Texas for CEDIA end of September, right? We'll all meet up and have dinner together.
Ooh, that would be fun. That'd be fun. I would absolutely do it. Whereabouts in Texas is it?
I'd have to look. I'm not sure, but I know it's the end of September, early October.
Because my buddy lives in Houston. He has comic book stores in Houston, so I've been down there.
See, now you have two reasons to go to Texas.
Exactly. Exactly. I'll have to.
I think it might be Dallas. I'm not positive.
Is it? Cedia?
There's only some way to be able to look something up.
Cedia like 2022. Let me look. Dallas. September 29th to October 1st.
I'll meet you there.
I would like. Here's the problem I'm having lately. Maybe it'll be better by then. So I don't know if you heard. I think I said it on this podcast. I was invited to Colorado for hockey at the beginning of June to get an award completely free. They'll fly me out. They put me up. USA Hockey pays for the whole thing. My wife was super excited to go. The last time I went was 5 years ago. And I took my son. We had a blast. It's an awesome time going. Colorado's beautiful. You get to they pay basically for a week out there. And all of a sudden I was like, I can't. I got nervous. I can't because of the way flying is right now, where they're canceling and you might get stuck or this or that. And with what I do for work, if I get
stuck, need to be there,
I got to be home. If I don't work, I don't make money. So if I plan for a vacation, that's fine. But what if all of a sudden I get stuck there and they say, well, you just got to stay a couple more days. Well, now I didn't work last week and now I'm going to miss two more days. And I don't make a lot in the wintertime. So I got to make money in the summer. And it's like, if I miss out on it,
make hay while the sun is shining.
Yeah, exactly. And what if it rains? There's only so many days I can work. And it's like, so I get stressed out by it. So right away I was like, I was all excited to go. I just had to tell him I was going and it took me. And then I was like, I'm sorry, I can't go. And as soon as I said I can't go, I was like, I was unstressed.
But it's the right decision. Dude.
Right. But at the same time, I look at this and I'm like, I could definitely do this. That's 29th to the 1st. It's a weekend. So you fly out like on, what is it? A Thursday night. And as long as I could guarantee I'd be home. But even if I got stuck for a day, I think I could pull this off.
You can swing it.
Yeah, that sounds fun. I
had to fly back from New York mid-pandemic. My son got a job. We moved him across country and drove the U-Haul in his new car out there and set him all up. And then he dropped me off at the airport. And it was a weird experience, having to travel. But, we just went down to Cabo San Lucas for my wife's birthday and had a great time. And,
yeah,
the planes still fly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I'm not worried about that. I'm just like, we canceled your flight. But hopefully by then, maybe it'll be better with CD. And it's still in the country. It's domestic. So you got less of a chance. So I'll look into it, though. I'll ask my wife about the flights. How about that? I've never been to Dallas. So that would be fun. And I've never been to Cedia. So that would be awesome.
That's great opportunities.
Yeah. It would be. And I mean, even it'd be fun if we could get all of the guys, but even if just a couple of them, or if none of them, we know what you'll be there. I'm sure SVS will be there. I know other people will be there. That would be a really good time. That would be a lot of fun. Oh, now I'm excited. Can't wait. Now I just got to pull it off. Oh man. That's awesome. So how long have you been going to these? To these shows,
years too many, 15 or so, I guess, on and off. I missed a lot of them in between. I know they did. I've done it in Denver. I've never been to Denver for one of their shows, but mostly Indianapolis and San Diego. So this will be my first time going to Dallas for this show.
So do you go for work or do you just go for yourself?
Both.
Both.
So I still do home theater design. So most of my job is marketing these days, but the fact that I have a background in this pulls me into working on it on some of the projects for the company I'm with now. So we're actually, we're a home builder, a large residential heating and air conditioning company, and we're also a general contractor that builds multifamily and assisted living. So in the assisted living, I saw what they were putting into their home theaters, and I said, that's woefully inadequate for what I would call a home theater. And so the last couple of them that we've built, I've been involved in specking installing, designing the home theaters for the assisted living facilities.
Ooh. Home theaters for assisted living facilities? That's pretty cool.
Yeah, we were talking, you know, theaters that'll seat 15 to 30 people. And, you know, I'm using primarily residential grade stuff, but, you know, building theaters that will rival anything that you're going to get, you know, in the residential market.
Oh, that's pretty cool. That's cool.
Fun toys.
What's that?
Fun toys.
Fun toys. Yeah, absolutely. That's what it's all about. That's what it's all about. What's the biggest theater you've designed?
So dollar wise, probably the showroom that we had for a previous employer. We had, and it wasn't a physically large room. We actually took a section of the warehouse, converted it to a demo room. We kind of had, you know, the good, better, best approach. And so this was going to be the best room. And then I further wanted to kind of split it. I wanted to be able to show two different systems, one at like a, you know, $35,000 point, one at a $70,000 point, that there was a fully acoustically treated, you know, airtight door, sharp projector back in the day that was, I think, 720p, one of the early, you know, HD ones, solid screen, but we put a, you know, a Sonance THX speaker system in it, and then we put a JBL synthesis system in the same room. So there were two different racks of gear, you know, one for the upper end system, one for the extremely nice system. And you know, I think it sat three people, but you could, you know, two complete 7.1 systems hidden inside this theater room that wasn't that large of a room. But yeah, so that was a lot of fun to work on. And we had to do that in like under 8 weeks from concept to design to getting vendors on board to getting the equipment in hand to installing and then demoing it at an event.
So this all got built and taken down?
It was an open house event. So we had custom home builders coming in to see all of this, and we wanted to be able to demo for them that night. So we knew there was a hard deadline that it had to hit. And it was, we got the first set of the Sonance THX cinema speakers, like off of the, you know, boat or whatever coming over. You know, all of the acoustic room systems, ARS, we used theirs for the absorption and the diffusion. And we couldn't get, it was a drop tile ceiling, and we couldn't get the acoustic tiles. So we ended up using their stuff and just wrapping it in, you know, the black Guilford of Maine fabric, and it came out looking really, really nice. But so, yeah, that was probably one of the more interesting or, you know, higher dollar projects. Yeah.
Sounds really interesting. So you said you had two price points in this room, right?
Mm-hmm.
In this one room at 35K and the 70K, basically, you know, two turnkey theaters, right?
Right.
Kind of an idea.
And that included, you know, a $10,000 projector, the screen, the electronics, and maybe the seating, right?
Okay.
The room and its decorations and the custom cabinets would be kind of separate from that.
Okay. So the price point was for the gear.
Pretty much.
Right. Different projector for each price point.
I left the same. It's funny you asked that. So the first projector I ever owned was the InFocus projector. We decided to pull out of that room because we also had the Sharp projector, and it had two, you know, I'm trying to remember if they were DVI or HDMI inputs back in that time. But yeah, we ended up using the same projector because it was easier to switch between the two systems without waiting for one to shut down and the other one to warm up.
Okay. So what did you go doubling your price? Did it double the quality?
You've heard of the law of diminishing returns.
Yeah, that's what we're getting at.
you can spend twice as much to get 10% more in performance, kind of a situation.
Right.
I'd go over there after work and listen to the systems, I'd always listen to the more expensive system. That's for sure.
Of course. Yeah. And it's like, but see, that's what I find is really interesting is like when we talk about the difference between physical media and streaming, it is getting closer. I will say it's a big difference, but to me, and that's the hard part is that somebody like us that would, which we're trying to be critical viewers. We're designing our theaters to be critical viewers, right? So when I see a big difference, my scale is a lot finer tuned. So a big difference to me is like, it'd be like, that's huge to me. But if you put it on the grand scale of things, it's like a 1% improvement. Mm-hmm. But I'm looking at such a fine line. You know what I mean? Like when you zoom in on a graph, something can look really big. But when you zoom out and put it compared to everything, you're like, that's really not that big of a difference.
But yeah.
Do you see absolutely. What I mean? And that's...
Yeah. And that's true, right? You know, I can build you a system for $7,500 that, you know, is almost as good as the, you know, 35K system. But it's just, you're going to compromise on bits and pieces here and there, right? It's going to be a, right. It's going to be a receiver instead of separates. It's going to be a... You know, Epson refurbished projector with manual controls versus a Sony or a JVC, right? So it's just, you can get it all to do that same similar levels of performance, which just depends on what your budget is.
Right. And then if you want, that's the thing, if you want to be a critical listener, that's where that money goes, and you will get little bits of improvement.
So my tagline on AVS Forum says at the bottom, would I have been happy not knowing how good it could be? Right. And that kind of speaks to the fact that would I have been happy,
bliss, basically
kind of right. If I had never known that there was a next level up, would I have been happy staying at the level I was at in right. the performance of my theater? Yeah, right. Maybe.
That's what I tell people about streaming. Streaming's yeah. great. But if you want to be, you can't use it as a critical viewer. You can't say like, well, the quality of this movie isn't very good. I've seen people say that about, I remember when Star Wars came out and people were telling me that this was not a very good, the 4K didn't come out right. They were saying it didn't look good. It didn't sound right. And I'm like, I think it looks great. And I'm like, and then you come to find out they're watching it on streaming, comparing it. And I'm watching it on disc and I'm like, oh, okay, wait a minute. That's a little bit of a difference.
It goes back to removing those variables, right?
Yeah, exactly. But the thing is if you just stay with that, if you just stay with streaming, that's great. I mean, you're fine. You're getting a great experience out of that.
And a lot of times streaming is the only way to watch it, right? Whether it's Foundation on Apple TV or mm-hmm. if it's, you know, all the Star Trek stuff on Paramount Plus. If you want to watch it, that's the way you're going
to
watch it.
That's the only way. And smartly, they're not allowing us to see it on physical because they don't want us to go, wow, that streaming stinks. Or that I can get it better here. But Apple they're doing a really good job with their streaming. I don't get into bit rates and stuff like that. I don't I don't even know how to find it out all the time. I just know what I see and what I'm experiencing. And it is really, really good. It's all of their shows are top notch production, and hopefully they're pushing the envelope. And you know,
when you're spending $30 million an episode, you can do that. So it's
yeah. Well, it's one thing to film it and spend that much money to do that, but getting it into our home and in the best quality, right? And it's like I think it's them, and then Netflix. Is probably a close second.
I've noticed
quality.
We talked about removing variables, right? I noticed this. I've heard other podcasts talk about this also, how much the volume dial has to swing depending on if I'm watching HBO Max, mm-hmm. if I'm watching Paramount Plus, if I'm watching
right
Netflix. You know, it's all over the place.
Right. It gets into that like thing we were saying about like music industry.
Where's the reference standard?
Where's the reference standard here? What are we doing? And it's like, it's only really evident to people like ourselves that understand a reference level at all for this stuff, because most people, the volume dial is swinging all the time anyways. When we used to watch, mm-hmm. I mean, commercials come blaring through. That's why soundbars now have like, you can flatten the entire thing out. There's a setting for that. There's all these things to manipulate everything, to take the highs down and bring the lows up, meaning volume, and, you know, make it all nice and even. That you can do that. But then now you're compressing, you go to watch a movie and you're compressing all the fun stuff.
Where's down. The dynamics?
Yeah. And then the guy whispering is yelling at you. It's like, so yeah, it's, but that's what the masses want, right? They don't want to have to pick the remote up anymore. To, oh my God,
or they might not even be using a soundbar. They might be using the speakers in a flat panel TV. That's
right.
Which designed to look good hanging on a wall, not sound good.
Sure. Yeah. That cracks me up when people shop for TVs looking for the best sounding TV, especially nowadays, yeah. Like, get a, like you read the reviews. If you're looking for a TV with great speakers,
it doesn't exist.
I used to want to buy a TV without speakers. I just wanted a monitor, right? I'm like, yeah. Can I save some money? And everywhere I went, the more research I did, they'd be like, no, because there's no money.
They need to sell it to the masses.
And there's no money in the speakers anyways. You're going to save $10. Like, yeah, we'll knock, yeah, we'll knock 10
you're
bucks
being generous.
Off. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, it's, yeah, I love what Apple's doing, you know, and I mean, the Kaleidoscape detractors think that's what's going to happen. That's what's going to take Kaleidoscape down.
Technology changes all the time. Companies come and go. So who knows? It's hard to say, but I think having it resident and local on my network, as opposed to stored somewhere else, you know, we talked about removing the variables. So,
well, I don't, the other thing is there's room for both.
True.
It's like, where's the idea that, I mean, we have McDonald's and Burger King, we have Coke and Pepsi, we have Apple, we have Netflix, we have Amazon. It's like, for some reason, there's a segment of the population that whenever you talk, you know, talk Kaleidoscape on the forums, they're like, well, I get the same thing with Apple, or, and then I'll do this. And then Apple's going to have that someday. Well, just because they, even if they get there, fantastic. Doesn't mean
I'm watching this right now.
The other one doesn't quit.
Right. Agreed. Like, so let me ask you this. What do you think about all of the different aspect ratios that we're seeing with content these days? You know, it used to be, it was for the most part, we went from 4:3 to 16:9 to 2.35 to 1, you know, CinemaScope. Now we're getting these 2.0, 2.2, you know, and a lot of it coming in the form of these streaming series. So I've, you know, I've added multiple buttons to the remote for different aspect ratios for different programming that we're watching.
I'm not crazy about it. I wish they went back to, like you said, I'm not crazy about the intermittent ones. Like, I like,
It jumps back and forth in the same movie.
Well, that too. Now, I mean, like, when I mean intermittent, I mean, like you said, like the 2.0 or the
In between.
Yeah. Like, let's do 16:9. Let's have three, right? You could do a 4:3, which is, I don't mind that at all. You know, similar to what Snyder did. Hey, knock yourself out. You want to put the bars on the sides? All right. That's a niche thing, similar to filming at 60 hertz, right? It's like, okay, knock yourself out. I thought it was a fun idea. I thought it was fun to experience. I built side masking for that. I thought it was a fun experience. But let's go 16:9 or CinemaScope. I mean, what is this, these ones that are right in between the two of them? You know, and it's like where you get these little bars at the top and the bottom, and you're like, I don't understand it. Like, why?
Well, and I think part of it is, you know, a lot of people are watching it sideways on their phones. So, you know, it's.
Right. So, I'm sorry. I don't give a crap. Yeah. Put the bars on the damn phones. Why are you doing it on my TVs? You know what I mean? It's like, you're on a phone. You clearly don't care about the quality. So,
agreed.
Let's. You know what I mean? Let's let it fit on the phone with bars, but let's, you do a 16:9 or a CinemaScope, whatever you want to do. I mean, it's like IMAX is basically a 16:9. So I don't mind that like half inch border at the top, like Avengers. What is that? A 178, I think, something like that. Sure. And it has that little bit of, but even on a 16:9 screen, that looks blacked out anyways, because it's so close to the edge. So you basically have almost a 16:9 full screen. And then, I mean, it's kind of like when you get into like 240, 235, 2.4, 235. Those are very close to each other. You can use the same masking, right? I do. And
yeah. And so my end game for projector screen is variable masking, right? I want to get eventually into, you know, whether it's a 2.0 to 1 screen where I've got constant image area, where I've got masking that can come in from the sides, masking from the top and bottom, and I can format that to
isn't fit. That the so, director's version? That what do they call it? A studio.
Stewart does have it. Director's choice. That's director's, their branding yeah. of the
yes.
Super variable masking on 2.0. It's stupid expensive, right? So yeah, the goal is how do I buy that for less than they sell it for?
Yeah. What would like a 130 inch screen go for? Is it like tens of thousands, isn't it?
Yeah. $20,000 probably in that range.
For that screen. That. But like you said, it's like, it does.
Everything. Right. It's like, oh, now it's exactly the right size.
Yeah. And I mean, and that's what, and your kaleidoscape will put it.
Right. In the tie that right into the controller.
Sure. Everything. Like, okay, well, if I had that kind of money, I'd just like to get, I would like to get a powered screen somehow. And just, I only need one. I only need one variable because I'll pick either, you know.
Well, I've seen some guys will do the dual screen approach, right? Where you've got a 16x9 screen and then you have a 2.35 that'll drop in front of it, and that solves your problem, right? So that you're hitting both of the major format sizes.
That's true too. Yeah, I didn't even think of that. And it would be cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
It would be a lot cheaper than a $20,000.
Yes.
But that masking is so cool.
It's bells and whistles.
Yeah. I don't think anybody's selling those used on Craigslist either.
I've bought curved masking screens used, believe it or not. And those are just a bitch to ship around the country, I'll tell you.
I bet. Have you used one? You've used one? Or just bought and sold?
I've decided not to use it after having it. Yeah. So.
I looked at that. You need the anamorphic lens.
Well, it's kind of built to take care of the pincushion effect caused by the lens, right? So it's kind of chicken to the egg kind of a thing. But didn't think it was going to add enough to warrant the time and expense and energy that would have to go into rebuilding the front wall of the theater to do it.
Right. How big of a screen was it? Like, what was the
6 feet tall. I'm trying to remember what the
width
was now.
Wow. Yeah, because you need, I mean, to have curved masking, you to take advantage of, you need to have a huge screen.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, it is an immersive, it's fun to see. It's gimmicky, but it's,
you know, and this is, these were from shops that either, you know, shut down a shop or change their storeroom display or whatever. You know, you can find it if you look long enough.
Oh, wow. I got to get into that more.
Yeah.
I keep buying my stuff new.
It's time or money. What do you want to spend?
Yeah, I know. That's, well, neither.
Yeah, I just want the fun toys.
I want the fun toys, and I'm having so much fun in my theater now. Just, I really am. I'm just, I don't know. Do you jump from movie to movie like I do with the kaleidoscape? Or do you, like,
it depends on how long I have. Yeah, I will. If I know I've got, you know, an hour before we got to go do something else, or if I'm just trying to, you know, watch something by myself before it gets too late, then yeah, I'll just watch some of the fun stuff that I like to watch. You know, and it might be a review that I heard on the way home where, you know, they were talking about scenes from a movie. I'm like, I have that movie at home. I can go put on and watch those couple of scenes. That sounds like
fun.
So yeah, I will do that. I do think that there's something to be said for appreciating a movie as the artist's intent in its entirety, right? I remember family members used to, like, you know, they'd put on Terminator 2 and they'd watch 10 minutes of it while they're, you know, doing something else, and like have it on in the background. I'm like, you know, no, this movie's too important for that. You need to sit down and watch this movie beginning to end. You know, if it's going to be on, you need to be there for it. You know, I've softened in that regard to some extent, but yeah, so I will enjoy flipping from movie to movie. And I like the way, you know, one scene can lead into the next one, right? Where, and
yeah, it's a flow.
Right. Let's say you're watching Terminator, Predator, Lord of the Rings, whatever it was, you know, kind of these multi-part movies, and you want to watch the action scene from this one or a big dialogue scene from this one, and you want to watch a chase scene from this one, and that's much easier to do with the way gear is now.
Oh, yeah.
Without having to get up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And dig around and find the disc and watch the FBI warning, and et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, yeah. It's that's what I'm really enjoying is that, like I said, the Zapedi, it's just so much clunkier to do. You can't do it, and it makes it a lot easier. You never have to get up. You can back out of a movie and go to the next movie. But it's a lot more pushes of the button. But with the Kaleidoscape, I mean, it's practically effortless how quickly you back out and go into the next one. And that's why I say, I'm like, it's not meant for everybody. Because if you're just more of a cinema connoisseur, like you like to enjoy an entire movie. And, you know, I've had people on say, like, they love to put in the disc. Like, they just love that the eject button, and you put the disc in. That's great. And you sit down and you watch an entire movie the way it was intended. That's fine. I like to do that, too, for the first viewing. But then when I get into a movie, I can't tell. And that's why I'm having so much trouble watching these new first-run movies, because I'm like, I'm having so much fun bouncing around watching all my older content that I love to. And that's why, like you're saying, like, oh, get an Alto. I'm like, yeah, but I would be like, what did I buy this morning? I just bought something this morning. Oh, Civil War. Mm-hmm. People were talking on Twitter. Are you Cap or Team Cap or Team Stark?
Iron Man. Yeah.
And which one? Which side are you on? And I'm like, oh, and I'm like, I'm reading the thread, and I was like, wait a minute, do I own that? Nope, bought it. Like, I gotta go watch some scenes from that, and it's like,
yeah, so. I had months where I was, you know, my wife's like, why is there $800 on a credit card for Kaleidoscape? Don't we own all these? Well, yeah, but they had a big sale. So
we do now.
We own it again. Aren't we lucky?
Yeah. I set it up as a separate credit card. I have this one.
I should do that.
I have one really old credit card that only has a $500 limit on it.
Self-imposed.
So, it is, but it isn't, because all I do is I look at it and go, ooh, I'm up to 420, pay that off.
Right.
But
So let me ask you this. So you had mentioned before that Kaleidoscape for you was something that you saw as unattainable at one point. It became, you know, they've worked their way down the market to, I don't want to say affordable, but, you know, reasonable.
More affordable. That's not even a good word.
Right. Do you remember Escient? And their product line?
No.
So Escient was a company that made these devices, and they were kind of a forerunner, predecessor to Kaleidoscape, and you would match it with these Sony 400-disc DVD changers, and they would then give you all of the cover art on screen, and you could jump from movie to movie. So I had a huge, you know, Escient system back in the day in an earlier theater that really enjoyed, thought it was one of the coolest things. It was like a poor man's Kaleidoscape, but you had to have all the discs, all the DVDs in the changer in order for it to work.
Yeah, that does sound familiar now. I do remember the DVD changers. I always wanted one of those. By the time I was able to get one, like afford one, and be able to integrate it, the Blu-ray came out.
Yeah.
And then I was like, well, I'm not going to buy a 400 disc DVD changer. I'm not even going to be buying DVDs anymore.
So the first DVD player, going back to old gear again, right? Mm-hmm. I was debating between buying the Laserdisc DVD combo or just buying, you know, a single DVD player, and ended up going out with I think it was a Pioneer 414 back in the day. It was my first DVD player that got me into it. And same thing. I remember the HD DVD versus Blu-ray wars.
Yep.
Right. I had my Toshiba.
Yep.
I did. So I had the Toshiba HDAX1, which was like, you know, their $1,000 HD single disc DVD player. And yeah, I think I sold it and all of my HD DVDs on eBay in one lump sum.
Yeah.
And migrated into, I think it was a Panasonic 210 entry level type Blu-ray player was the first one. And it's still downstairs.
I don't remember. I think I bought two. I bought the $500 model of each when they were when they first came out. I wanted to be an early adopter on both, and I bought movies like if they had the tough thing was is finding for me, I wanted to buy movies that they had on both formats, but mm-hmm. different studios were backing dip. So that was very difficult yep. to find. There were a few, but I remember HD DVD had, I think they had the Bourne series over there. Okay. I remember watching that. I actually prefer, and I think most people agree, it's like the HD DVD was the better format. They had better machines. They had better load times. They had a better picture. Blu-ray was a disaster at the beginning. Like,
I remember the downloadable aspect of Blu-ray was just challenging.
Oh,
when it first
what
came
changed
out.
All that was the Sony, the PS3.
PS3.
Yeah. That became the go-to Blu-ray player. Even if you weren't a gamer, everybody right. said like, oh, you're a home theater owner, get a Sony, well, you know, get a PS3. And they're like, well, I don't play video games. Yeah. But there's no better,
quicker interface,
because it was basically a computer, right? It had a much better hardware in it to be able to handle what the Blu-ray was. And I want to say that kind of saved the Blu-ray. Because it softened the issues that they were having, mm-hmm. that the standalone players couldn't handle. You know, some of them were like a minute load time, a minute to get to the menu. Got to the menu.
I think I was writing press releases for AVS Forum back at that time. And I remember, there was heated debates going on. Mm. You know, I remember writing one about, we're going to stay out of it. We're going to support both until, you know, see what happens. But same thing with, you know, Beta and VHS back in the day, right? Two technologies that companies that couldn't find a way to work together.
Yeah, and I don't remember that one. I was too young, but from what I understand, Beta was the better version.
Performance-wise, had more capability, yeah.
It had more capability. And the common factor, both were, both were back. The winners, you know, VHS and Blu-ray, both backed by Sony.
Yeah.
And, you know,
big part of it.
It's like, I don't know. Is that why?
Deep pockets.
Yeah. It's that, that's what I remember knowing the Blu-ray and HD DVD war. And it was just how long before the studios bailed on HD DVD. And they just, it was like really, watching it, it was like a battle of attrition. Just watching the studios, and I was trying to support both, but then it really is weird to watch when you're seeing and experiencing it for yourself that one format is better. Why is the other format winning
in business? Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like HD DVD was better. It was smoother. It was But for some reason, it's like it's just that's how business is done, right? It's marketing. It's which studio? Like, hey, we're gonna fit this square peg in a round hole. If you don't like it, this is what you're getting. You're like, okay, and you had no choice, and we are here today. And I don't think anything would have. I don't think if it was HD DVD, we'd be in a better place. It just took longer for that platform to get to speed, really, right? What do you think the next format war is going to be?
I don't know if we're going to see another physical format. You know, I think we're going to be moving towards digital.
Yeah.
I think we'll be, you know, whether it's 4K versus 8K, who knows? Hard to predict that future.
Well, what's hard is if everything's digital, I'm trying to wrap my head around the idea of like, how do you come up with a new format of digital? Like somebody would have to invent something that maybe now you can stream faster, more information, and then have it be a war. Right.
Well, who is it? Tesla said they're going to start having all of their phones talk to their satellites. And I just wonder, you know, what are the cell phone companies going to do in that situation when you're not tied to a phone that's tied to a cell tower anymore if they're all talking to satellites overhead, right? So it's that's a kind of, you know, potential industry game changer where there's a major paradigm shift in how we do things.
Wow. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. That would be, yeah. That's the other way to go, is if you went true wireless. We don't get internet through our wires anymore. If we went true wireless.
Yeah, the day is coming.
That, you know, and you just literally, your house talks directly to a satellite. So going back to satellite TV, but I know Dish, when I had Dish, they were working on it. They were working on that wireless. It just, the bandwidth, just it wasn't up to speed. Like, they have it. Like, people can get wireless, they can get internet through Dish if you're out in a place that doesn't have cable. Yeah, in the sticks. They have it, but it's a much slower bandwidth than when you get with, it's not dial-up, but it's much slower.
Right, I think it's faster download, and the upload is extremely slow.
Yeah. Going back, yeah. So, very interesting. You got anything else, Joe?
No, well, two things. One, DJ, I appreciate you, you know, having this format to talk to other home theater enthusiasts that, you know, every episode I feel like I'm getting to hear from other people who are into the same hobby. And then, you know, part two is we're recording here on Mother's Day morning. So thank you to the wives and the mothers that let us enjoy these hobbies.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, this will be out on Tuesday after Mother's Day, but happy Mother's Day to everybody. And thank you to all the mothers, like Joe just said, because it's I don't know who my youngest listener is. That's very interesting. We're all older people. We all have wives that, you know, that are some are more into the hobby, I'll say, than others, and others just give us free rein, right?
Right. But
they all allow us to do this, and then, like, you know, like you and myself being able to actually talk on Mother's Day morning and be like, yes, dear, you can do that.
I'm going to brunch after this. So.
Yeah, so same here. We're heading out. We got our dinner, go visit my mother-in-law, and then dinner with my family and all that stuff. But yeah. So, yeah, good point, Joe. Thank you very much. But, yes, and thank you for coming on. And, I mean, everybody that's come on has thanked me for allowing this. And it's like, I can't do it without you guys. It's like,
no, it's two-way street.
It is. It's a lot of fun. Glad to be a part of it. And thank you to everybody for listening, participating. If you want to be on the show, Joe, it's easy, right?
Click a button. Piece of cake.
Yeah. Yeah, it's actually, I was like waiting and I'm like, oh, I got to run. I put a little sign on. I'm like, I'll be right back, Joe. I come back and you're sitting there waiting. I'm like, oh, cool. All right, cool. Really good time. So if you want to be on the show, it's real easy. I'm getting more and more people now that I've never spoken to before. Like, you and I have talked for, you know, most of the people that have participated so far have been people like yourself, Joe, that we've exchanged emails and a lot of conversation over the last year or so.
Right.
But I'm getting new people like, hi, I am such and such. And I'm like, I'd like to be on the show. Okay, cool. And that's so much fun, right? Now we're getting even, and I think that's great. And I owe that to people like yourself, Joe, and all the past guests that I've had that are, you guys are stepping up, and I know people are nervous. People are worried. They're like, you know, I get it. I'm getting the emails. I'd love to, but I'm just too nervous. I understand that. But guests like yourself, you're coming on and people are putting themselves out there and being a great example. And it's bringing more people out, which I think is so much fun. Because honestly, yeah. Joe, isn't this just like going either into that brick and mortar store or going to Cedia and you run into somebody and just hang out and talk? That's all I want.
It's a conversation.
Yeah. And it's like, if I run into you at Cedia, we're going to talk home theater, right? But we're also going to go, how's the wife? How's the kids? How's this? What are you doing? What else do you do? You know, there are other conversations, and that's what I want to have. That's the fun.
And then I'll remind you to promote HD tours.
HD tours. Thank you. Yes. Oh my God. Talk about thank you. I'm in the middle. I'm doing Steve George's. I got to edit Steve George's. And I had an issue with my computer with the editing. It was weird. I was rendering for my other podcast and this podcast. I'm rendering stuff. And it was weird. It was only rendering out the audio track partially. So like on my other podcast, there's me, John, and then I have an audio track for the sound, for all the extra sound. And I'd render it through Adobe. And it was just so weird. All of a sudden, I'd like put it out and I'd go and listen back, and you could hear me and you couldn't hear him. All right, re-render. Could hear me, could hear him, you couldn't hear me. And then another one. Oh, it's just the audio track. I'm like, oh, there's all my sounders. Who gives a crap about those? I'm like, it was just a funky thing. And I got all backed up, but I apologize to Steve George. I apologize to everybody. We got an HD Tours. It's a fantastic one. I just got to get it finished and edited. And it's, you take on these responsibilities and then you feel like you're letting people down.
Well, let me know. It'd be fun to do that sometime in the future. Also.
Yes, absolutely. Get your, if you want, I'll put you in right away. I will put you on the schedule. I'll talk to, I got to get Steve's done. I think we have another one ready to go. We have another one we're ready to do, but we do them right here like this. This is what we use. We record it. You just do a video. Yeah, I'd love to see your theater. We'll definitely do that. We need to get more of those. So, but yeah, if you want to be part of HT Tours and have your theater featured, you can contact me the same way. If you want to be on the show or do HD Tours, you can email me at brightsidehometheater@gmail.com or you can DM me on Twitter at @brightsidehd. So there you go. Thank you for reminding me about that, Joe. Really.
You bet.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you, Joe, for coming on. It's been a great time. Can't wait to have you back. And I can't wait to see you at Cedia. That's what we should do.
There we go.
I meet you at Cedia. You're coming back the following week. And then we're doing the show and talk about our experience at Cedia. And hopefully there'll be other people there, too, and we'll talk to them. Oh, so much fun. Awesome. Awesome. Thank you, everybody. That's it for this week. Go push play.
Hey, Fred.
This has been a Hey Fred production with theme music by Jeff Bernhardt and Throne Vault Productions.